It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. We've got a great show planned for you. My good buddy, Mike Elgin, stops by. Becky Worley from Good Morning America. And Greg Farrell from the Packet Pushers. He's always fun. We'll talk about mixed and virtual reality and Apple's ambitions in that space. Apple has ambitions to go after Netflix, too. And did FARC get FARC'd? Or is it really their fault? The discussion's next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 597, recorded Sunday, January 15th, 2017. FARC Google. This Week in Tech is brought to you by SeatGeek. Get the best deal on sports, concert, and theater tickets with SeatGeek. To get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase, download the SeatGeek app and use the offer code TWIT. And by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. And by IT Pro TV, an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. Visit itpro.tv/twit and use the code TWIT30 for a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TWIT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the latest tech news. And we're all in studio today, which I love. Mike Elgin is joining us. He is a regular contributor to Computer World, now Fast Company.
Fast Company, et cetera. And Digital Nomad. I've got Elgin.com where I put all my stuff, if anybody's interested in
and,
my stuff.
And you've been staying here because you have a new granddaughter.
That's one reason. We're Princess zipping up some stuff, but we're also planning 2017. We're going to be all over the world again.
Nice.
It's going to be really great, starting with Venice, which is nice.
Oh, how hard.
Oh,
how tough.
Oh, dear.
I don't know. You know, people are moving out of Venice because so there's no big shopping malls. And it's just so hard. Where am I going to get my blue jeans? I don't want to live there. Becky Worley. Good to have you, Mike. Becky Worley's also here. Another dear friend from ages gone by. She's the big time host, tech reporter at Good Morning America. We're seeing you every day now.
I'm not quite at host status. I'm knocking on Michael Strahan and Robert.
Do they have like a hierarchy? Like, are you junior host?
Oh no, I'm the way C team on the West Coast, and I love it.
Our West Coast C team
flying under the radar at 2:30
no,
in the morning
because they clearly love you because you're on all the time.
I wake up a lot and have the 4:40 live shots, so
wow.
I'm doing the morning thing. But there's so much interesting consumer technology news, and it's really fun to bring that into a mainstream perspective, and then get to come do this and geeky podcasting with you.
And I just noticed, but there's a little tribute. If you look in your shot to Call for Help, remember on the old Call for Help show, we had a kind of a window like the one behind you.
Yeah.
And there was a fake tree branch with a string on it. And every once in a while, every time you walk by, she just tug the branch to make it look like
windy.
Yeah. So I mentioned that, and apparently our staff has decided to put a fake tree branch in the window behind you.
Aw. It looks a little bit like a bird that had hit the window.
It could be anything, pretty much. It's a tribute, though, to Call for Help. Think of it that way.
A tribute.
Also here, I'm thrilled to have Greg Farrell back. He is the host of the Packet Pushers Network.
Thank you.
IT and enterprise tech guru.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's good to be back.
Brilliant.
It's been
fella.
A while. I was lucky to be here in the Valley, and I couldn't hold myself back from coming up to see what's going on.
Were you here for work?
Yeah, I'm doing working with some of the startups in the Valley this week, and then I'm doing a social media tour of about a dozen technology startups in my field.
Oh, that's fun.
Yes.
So you're not just a podcaster. You actually work.
Well, this is podcasting, so part of my media presence is to get in front of the vendors and learn about their technology. So
But do you work? I mean, do you consult? And
I do a consult and analyze. Yeah. I advise a number of companies about their technology strategies.
Big
and
networks,
yes.
too. I mean, not just...
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm working on one of the biggest, highest performance compute labs in the UK right now, working on their next supercomputer build out, which is really interesting. And I have a number of companies that I advise to keep my hand in as a professional network engineer or an enterprise IT engineer. And then, but my real full-time job is the podcast. And I want to keep my finger on the pulse of real technology, not just, you know, become a podcast host who's like, blah, 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 blah. Which is the risk.
Looking at you.
I take that a little personally. Packetpushers.net. No, it's all right. It's
well, you know
late.
The chat
it's
room's okay. like. I mean, Pat, the chat it's room okay. will tell. They'll keep you honest.
Yeah, they do.
Well,
yeah.
What's interesting about what you do is that you do so much call-in, actual help, help me figure stuff out.
And also, I work with, like, Steve Gibson and Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. And so by working with all these people who really are covering these stories, it keeps me up to date.
Yeah, anybody who's doing this is doing keeping
up to
date
somehow.
I'm not
hands-on, though. Yeah, you got to keep up to date, but I'm not hands-on.
But I'm in a much deeper, but I'm much more vertical. So I'm in a niche of data networking and enterprise IT.
I try to play with all the new phones, own as many as I can, the new computers, just so I can keep up with stuff people are buying.
We have a bunch of doctors on Good Morning America who are on staff, and I was doing a segment with one of them the other day, and I was trying to reach her, and they said, oh, she's in surgery. And I said to myself, would I want a TV doctor operating on me?
You wake up and you go, oh, I know you. I love you. Just go ahead. Get that pancreas.
I would have a podcasting geek help me with my computer.
Yes.
But I don't know about
if you have a TV doctor, you actually want them to be in surgery. You don't want a TV doctor who's just making stuff up.
That's right.
Well, that's true.
So you want them to be practicing.
Did you go to CES while you were out here?
No.
Mike, did you go to CES?
No. No, I avoid that like the plague.
Becky, you must have gone to CES.
Negative. It's only the second one I haven't gone to.
Wow. Why not?
No interest. I think, you know, I've heard from a lot of people it just was not a media story.
Yeah, I mean, the stories, maybe there's little crumbs. I think you actually had a great story about Zeiss's smart glasses.
Yeah, that was last year. That article was written about a year ago. But the reason the reason I put it there is because we were talking about Apple working with Carl Zeiss, and people are like, gosh, does Carl Zeiss have any? Yeah, they have amazing technology. And that's
smart glasses.
That was teased at last year's CES. The technology is super solid. And if you read that article, I'm talking about how they're working with some competitor to Google. So that doesn't support or not support contention.
That was the big story from Robert anyway. He says, and it's not clear, we talked about this a little bit last week. It's not clear where he got this. He says, in his Facebook post, a Zeiss employee confirmed the rumors that Apple and Carl Zeiss are working on a pair of augmented reality or mixed reality glasses that may be announced this year, maybe next year. Then later on in the post, he says something about the fact that the people in the booth made faces when he mentioned that, as
laughed
if they were
nervously.
Laughed nervously. Away. I hope that wasn't his source.
Well, that's what he said in the post. That's his source.
That's the source.
He said to the employees, "Why are you doing something with Apple?" And they laughed nervously.
This implies,
away.
Though, a Zeiss employee confirmed implies that a Zeiss employee said something to him, not merely laughed nervously. You think
that's
nervous?
Changed from what I saw earlier?
Yeah. Well, this is the previous post. I don't know. Anyway, it wouldn't be so much of a surprise. And the other piece that's of interest is the Zeiss booth was in the augmented reality marketplace, and yet they had no augmented reality products. So that kind of, you know, confirms something. They're working on something secret.
So you remember that technology? Remember bookstores?
Yeah.
There is a building where they built, there was books inside.
You know, I was in one yesterday. Oh, wait a minute. That was augmented reality.
Yeah, that's
it. I literally was. We had a company called Occipital who makes the first one I've ever seen for an iPhone, the visor for the iPhone. And it's augmented reality so you can see things and touch things. Watch the new screensavers from yesterday. And then our co-host, Nathan Olivares Giles from the Wall Street Journal, the guy said, okay, now touch that wall. He touched the wall and a hole opened up in that wall and there was a bookstore in there that they had scanned and you could walk in and go from augmented reality, a real world, to a virtual reality in a bookstore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So thank God we still have bookstores.
Yeah, and thank goodness Amazon didn't run them out of business and into virtual reality. So anyway, so in bookstores, they used to sell these flat lenses. It was a flat little credit card size lens to magnify the book. Remember those at the
check? They were Fresnel
That's called
lenses.
A Fresnel lens. Yeah. It's 200-year-old technology. That's the technology that the Carl Zeiss technology is based on. They put it into the glass, and they have 250 patents supposedly around smart glasses. And so the idea is for augmented reality, mixed reality, they'll be able to build these into ordinary glasses at low cost, and these will be just you go to the optometrist office.
That's the key at Fresnel, because unlike a regular lens that you have to grind to precise tolerances, these are just, and you've all seen them.
Yeah.
They're just little wedges of glass that give you a less high quality experience.
But imagine what's possible now with lasers and computer
driven. Oh, maybe they could
driven.
Be better.
Yeah. Mm. So they've apparently got some really fantastic technology, and it's actually a separate company. They spun out a separate company just to do this sort of thing. And I'm really excited about this technology in particular, but other efforts in general that will result in smart glasses that look like ordinary glasses. Mm. There are a bunch of companies working on things like that, taking different approaches. But I love this approach because you definitely want visuals. You definitely want a screen.
Okay, so let me ask the question. Why does this form of augmented reality glasses differ from Google Glass? Why do you see the difference between the bright screen in the upper corner of the lens being so socially different, or sort of from a market use case,
yeah,
better than
compared
what
Google to
Google
Glass?
So I think that the hot part of the company they should be partnering with, and I talked about it in the article, is Luxottica, which is the umbrella company for almost every
glasses
company
in the world.
Yeah. Sunglasses Hut. All the
Ray-Ban.
All the vanity. If you get Gucci glasses, those are Luxottica glasses. It's an Italian company. And so I'm pretty sure that within 3, 4, 5 years, you'll be able to go to the optometrist office and do you want progressives? Do you want this? Do you want smart? And if it's smart, what's your platform, whatever? It's a checkbox item. And you just get your ordinary glasses and there they are. They're like, they have this similar effect as what do they call it when you have two different lenses
bifocals.
Inside?
Bifocals.
It'd be like bifocals. And you'll be able to just get little notifications. So-and-so is calling you. And the problem with Google Glasses were twofold. First, they looked really stupid. It was a big boom that came out in front of your face.
By the way, this guy spent $1,500 on them and wore them around for
a long time. I still use
them.
I love them. Right.
Well, I think the fundamental thing about Google Glasses was they were an ego play. The idea was that they were meant to look like you're a dick.
Well, I don't think they were meant to.
You would stand out in a crowd.
I think that was incidental.
Meant to be mobile
advertising.
Yeah.
I think the dick came free.
Yeah. Stupid comes.
It was part of the
stupid is a stupid.
I just want to show you up here in Fort Bragg. There is, and there are a number of these. The old lighthouses.
That's how they started. 200
were Fresnel lenses. These are made in France. I think it's pronounced Fresnel because it's a French.
It's Fresnel or Fresnel.
Yeah, there's an S in it. But well, you don't want to say it wrong because you're a TV announcer. I'm just a podcast. Yeah. But these lenses are jewels. I went up to Fort Bragg and saw these, and this one's still operational. It's it's run by the Coast Guard. But it was completely restored, and they're just gorgeous lenses. And so they could make these giant crystal lenses without having to... Yep.
And focus the light
and
where
focus
the ships
the light.
Are.
Right.
Yeah.
And
well,
it was
well,
good
there's
enough.
There's a few things in there. One is, so Google Glasses were meant to be an ego play. You put them on your face, and they're a statement.
I disagree. That wasn't meant to be an ego play at all.
Absolutely.
No way.
Well,
I tried to defuse it.
It was an experiment.
Yeah.
An experiment.
So if that's the case, then why are Snapchat's glasses working so well? Because they look like glasses, right? Now, the problems with Snapchat glasses is that if you're medically... got an optical, medical optical, right. You can't use them.
Well, whereas that's why Luxottica should get
the advantage of Luxottica.
You're saying Snap's glasses are not an ego play? They're limiting, they're putting the...
They're not vending machines. They're trying to make ordinary glasses look like an ego play, but they look like ordinary glasses and they operate like ordinary glasses.
They look ridiculous. They have a lens on both sides. They look like
I don't disagree with you,
but
they look
days,
less
the
ridiculous.
The day I didn't bring my Snapchat spectacles in, and I could be wearing them now.
How do you feel when you wear them?
Yeah.
Like a dick?
like a schmuck. Like a trendy dork.
I might have started something.
You know, I wore them to Vegas because I was just curious what the reaction would be. And, of course, Vegas is camera shy to some degree. In fact, when you get to Vegas now, they even have ads that say, let's keep what happens in Vegas here. Let's not share it too much. But nobody knew what they were.
Yeah.
I thought, so only we hipsters and Snapchat folks and tech people.
We hipsters.
Greg opts out.
I know what they are. Even the waitress at the restaurant, and I'm like taking pictures of her. She says, what are you doing? What are those? And I had explained what they were to her. And I think she was probably somewhat uncomfortable.
But. Maybe the difference that the Google Glass was attempting to be very, it almost looked Euro or intellectual with
that's
the
what
form.
Greg's saying.
And then, you know, the Snapchats are goofy. They just look
partly is also that they cost $1,500. So that's kind of, it was a little pretentious to wear them because it was a statement. I'm willing to spend $1,500.
They were trying to attract
cutting edge.
content creators and experimenters and people like that. It was an experiment. They were upfront about it, said, this is a trial.
They said that.
We're going to try it. Mm. And then when they, because they didn't know what to do with it. They had technology. They didn't know what the application was. It was so new that they
what happened to the rumor that they were going to keep making these?
They are doing it. They're going to work. It's probably going to come out for enterprise. It's going to be a real product.
It's not, though, augmented reality or virtual reality. It's just a screen over your eyebrow.
It can be augmented reality if the application is
It's not even heads up.
Reality.
Heads up would be superimposed on what you're looking at. Mm. It's heads up literally where you have to look up. Yeah. Well, so it's like you have a little monitor right here.
For manufacturing, it'll be augmented reality. People will be using machines and the instructions and things.
I'm excited about. I think augmented reality, where it is superimposed, it is a heads up display. Yeah.
There are companies out there today using Google Glass for health and telemedicine.
Right. Yeah.
And
it's so like a reference manual that's there.
That's where I fundamentally disagree with what you're saying, Greg, that this is going to be an add-on to your specs. Like, do you want polarized? Do you want sunglasses that go with it with that prescription? Do you want smart? I'm still not seeing a regular human use case.
Notifications.
No. There's no camera. There's no camera.
Yeah. What? That's real.
I walk around and I don't know who I'm looking at. I don't know. I know I worked with you. I can't remember your name. It pops up your name, some seminal.
That doesn't exist. Mm.
You just called me Greg. If you'd had these, you would have mine.
Did I?
I think it exists. I think it's completely doable. So they've turned off. For instance, Google has that capability.
Yeah,
but Google has turned it off because of the creep factor, and that's the biggest problem, in my opinion, with Google Glass.
Exactly, it's
a
camera.
The creep factor.
Yes. Yeah. Without a camera, it's just you have.
It's informational.
So if you think about we're entering this world of artificial intelligence virtual assistants, where you can have a really actually smart and useful Siri, Cortana, etc. Am I not supposed to say those words? and imagine
just don't
when
say Alexa.
Don't say that. So imagine when you have real preemptive. You're walking down the street and says, "Hey, you should be interested in this. I know that you care about this sort of thing," and just a little subtle notification that other people can't see. And you're meanwhile, you're wearing ordinary glasses. I think that's really what people.
I would love that. My
visualization is. How much I disagree with that. Go ahead.
Most people here have an Apple Watch. So my visualization is: if you take the Apple Watch and put it on the inside of the glasses as something that you can see as you're moving around instead of having to wristwatch it, then that's loosely where I see the progression going is down that direction.
And that's why I think it's very credible, that the Scoble story, that Apple might be interested in doing this. I don't know if they're doing it with Zeiss, whatever.
They're doing it with all of them.
That's
what
I would
guess. The big company is talking to everybody who makes components for this type of stuff. They're talking to all of them all the time.
And so it's meaningless to say they're doing it because
they're talking to Luxottica. They're going to have meetings all over the place. Nothing's going to come of 99%.
Tim Cook has said now at least twice, we're very interested in AR.
Duh.
But I think that's him putting a little flag in the sand saying, we want to claim this. And people are looking at Apple saying, look, you got nothing. You got no VR. You know, Siri is lagging way behind everybody else's product. What are you doing besides coming out with watch bands? And I think this is Tim saying, no, we're doing something. We're just, as typical Apple, we're not going to tell you anything until we have something. And I think it's very credible because of what you said, that this would fit into their line. By the way, somebody's pointed out, I think we talked about it on MacBreak Weekly, the AirPods could have a similar augmented.
Well, see, but this is another thing. Apple would love for people to be able to wear AirPods every waking moment.
All the time.
But you can't. The batteries don't last long enough. Right. They're too weird looking. Yeah. But glasses, through bone conduction, can give you audio in a device that only has to be charged once a week.
Yes.
And since you've already got this smarts and the intelligence and the battery and all that stuff in the glasses, people are going to want a little visual cue to go with the audio.
But think about the production challenges here. Glasses have to be fitted to every single person. You can't produce one product.
They already are. It exists already. The whole system
couldn't
of measuring
you, like,
the
have
eyes.
Something that goes in the frame that is.
Yes, you could. But now you've now got to produce an outlet which can customize for every human head. Do you want round frames? Do you want square frames? Do you want clear? You've got women's. You've got men's. You've got children's.
That's how it works already.
Sonica does that. It's just a question of having something they could
add. Apple is not about customization. Yeah. Apple is about producing one Apple Watch that everybody gets and we shove it down your throat.
Apple's not going to be the company
that
does
AirPods.
This.
There's no earpod. There's no ability to have a soft, or over ear. You can't have headphones.
AirPods,
you can't have earphones.
Just
AirPods
are.
This is the only choice you get.
Yeah,
and suck
Apple.
It if you don't.
Yeah.
You know, Apple is not about customization. It is about personalization of the experience in software. It is not about customization of the hardware. So for Apple to do glasses would require a fundamental shift in its corporate operations, and that is not something
unless
it's likely to achieve.
They make clip-ons.
Well, this is where these Luxottica comes in, because those glasses are actually manufactured in regional locations. So when you go to the optometrist and you get your glasses made, they're actually made in local regional. The machines are fully robotic, and your order goes off into an area, usually within about 500 miles of where your optometrist is. Mm-hmm. And they're manufactured on the spot and then shipped to your location, popped into the lenses, blah, blah, blah. And so in theory, this Fresnel effect could be something that could be, you know, a base lens is produced in a factory overseas, shipped to the local location, and then it's actually customized for the person. It's popped into the frame that mm-hmm. you choose, and maybe the frame's got switchable components inside.
Well, there you go. You just
perhaps
answered your own.
But I think that's a decade away.
Oh, how many? Decade away.
Easily. The material science that you need to carry a battery in here.
Isn't there also a case to be made that Apple's just going to scattershot, do everything they can with everyone on every technology to try and figure out what they can get into?
I do think they're going to have to support it from a software thing. I mean, if people start switching to Android so they can have the new smart glasses from their optometrist, then they will have to do something.
Right.
I think that there's something. I'm sure they're looking at it and considering it and wondering about it. You talked about batteries. I talked to a startup in San Francisco, tiny startup called View, and they're getting around all these issues. They have good audio through bone conduction. They have batteries on both sides, or no, they have battery on one side, the electronics on the other side, and they're using lights and blinking lights and things off in the corner that alert you, and you can customize it. Green means your wife is calling, that sort of thing. And, you know, their batteries last for a week and so on. They're not projecting a screen, but you can easily see how notifications with screen, you know, a visual element could be optimized and customized to give you at least a couple of days of battery life in today, using today's battery technology. And again, mm-hmm. somebody's going to figure this out.
Apple has a big advantage. They have a rabid fan base that's willing to spend a lot of money. I don't think this Apple Watch would go anywhere if it had been from Samsung. In fact, it hasn't from Samsung. but Apple could make a fairly expensive product that they could get early adopters. What I find interesting, I don't think Apple will own this space ever. But I think Apple wants to be in this space.
Apple doesn't do partnerships well. So I'm trying to say is that to mm-hmm. perhaps trying to say indirectly is Apple needs to partner with other people to deliver those products.
Or buy Carl Zeiss.
Yeah, and that ain't going to happen.
Carl Zeiss is only one optical supplier, one of about 10, right? And not even the biggest.
They're the ones with 250 pounds for this technology.
I don't see these as roadblocks. But I do think that Apple's a little bit behind in so many of the other technologies that are going to be required to make this thing succeed. And we are seeing a convergence. I mean, we're seeing amazing voice is clearly one of the next big things. I would argue that artificial intelligence, machine learning, voice, and augmented reality are kind of the next big three things.
Yep.
Which is interesting because they've been here for coming as the next big thing for over a decade.
Well, that answers your decade question.
Yep.
We are making this progress, we're in the hockey stick, I think. We're starting to get
voice
in the
is
hockey
at the
stick.
Tipping point.
Yeah.
For sure. I don't buy it with AR and VR. I see VR in gaming. I see AR in
VR
industry.
I'm not excited about. I really think it's AR. VR only in to the mm-hmm. extent that it's used in conjunction with AR.
There'll be niche mm-hmm. use cases.
Yeah.
And people
will
run around
great.
And go, oh, but it works for.
Yeah, gaming's great. But I don't think you want to walk around town with a VR.
I can't help being a consumer reporter and thinking of these through that lens,
right.
No pun intended. And that's where I see.
But look at how unexpected the A word echo. Well, I shouldn't say. I don't want to do a command.
The
I don't
echo surprised us, but it worked.
It worked because, and for consumers, it worked.
Well,
and this is
we don't know the sales, and it's.
I do.
But apply
those who have an Amazon voice controlled device in their home have been shown to
well
have 10% higher purchases from
Amazon. Of course,
Amazon.
Well done.
I do. I just bought batteries that way. I just bought batteries, and I do that all the time.
It's frictionless.
So
shopping.
One of my favorite
danger.
Events of the year, and I'm actually moderating a series of panels, and it's a week after next, at the Virtual Assistant Summit in San Francisco.
Oh, how fun.
And this is for the people who are the movers and shakers who are actually building this stuff.
Awesome.
All the heavy hitters are there. It's an amazing conference, and the progress you see year after year is just phenomenal. The application of artificial intelligence. Last year, a tiny little woman from Google got up on stage and told us how Smart Reply works in Inbox and in Allo.
Is she going to be in the Google Home? How tiny
she's going to be in there. And she talked for like a half an hour about how the AI behind that, it was mind blowing.
You know, I was just talking about the radio show. Somebody said, well, I want to tag all my photos. And is there a software that will do that? Mm-hmm. I said, just upload it to Google.
Yeah.
Google's amazing. It's one thing to say, okay, give me pictures of Paris. That's easy to do. You've got GPS. You've got landmarks. But try it with dogs. It will find any breed of dog. Now, that's, I think, a very big challenge for any intelligence because, a Doberman Pinscher doesn't look anything like a Shih Tzu, and yet it knows that both are dogs. That's an amazing step forward in artificial intelligence or machine learning.
It detects different types of food. You can say, show me burgers, show me pizza,
show me this. That's hard to do.
It's unbelievable.
I feel like huge progress is being made. It is not being made in Apple, as far as I could tell. You never know because Apple's a black box.
Apple's got
amazing AI, but it doesn't have the data pool. The thing about Alexa is Amazon has been seeding the point of the Echo is to seed it out there to get collecting data. It was never about selling products. It was about collecting data to build an AI.
I would argue it's both. Why not? It doesn't have to be one, right?
But it's not explicitly just... Most people have too much of a narrow focus on sales.
It's a wonderful synergy because we're making 10% more on these guys and they're giving us data.
Yeah.
But so Google's done this historically. Google's always done this. I guarantee you that's why Google Photos is free and they're encouraging you to upload pictures. They're building a database of machine learning. It's why Google 411, they even said that we're collecting voice samples. It's been very helpful.
That's why there's no artificial intelligence startups below $1 billion.
Right.
Because you have to have the data. And the only way you can have the data is to tap into...
We have been in this industry for the last few decades. We've been in a position where somebody could start something in a garage and really build a business. We are rapidly getting to the point where you can't be a Facebook, you couldn't be a Google, you can't be a machine intelligence company because it requires too much to get started. We're kind of gone back to that old day. You couldn't be a steel company unless
you're giving away email to get a data lake.
Just to get the data.
For a while, academics were leaving the university and forming little startups for AI and stuff like that, but all the Silicon Valley companies have bought them up, especially...
That's all you can hope for.
DeepMind, Google bought DeepMind, which is
amazing. The reason that those AIs got bought up was because they can't monetize because they don't have enough data to artificial intelligence size.
But there's a...
I just made that up.
One of the weirdest problems,
that sounded
though,
good to me. I believed you. You said it with authority. Yeah.
That's what's important.
That's the important thing. It didn't help us with the bomb.
Always certain, sometimes right. Yeah. That's my major philosophy.
Did you see the story that DeepMind... DeepMind won the Go championship.
Yep.
But what Google has been doing without announcement is unleashing DeepMind against real players... all over the world, particularly in China and Japan, where Go is played, and I guess people didn't know that they were playing DeepMind. They thought they were playing a real Go master. It has now beaten the 50 top Go players in just complete dominance. So you could say when it beat Lee Sedol, who is a great player, but that was one guy. It was tuned to beat his style, etc. DeepMind and AlphaGo are getting better and better. And this is the thing that in my opinion, Google's huge advantage and the thing that should scare people because they are farther ahead than we maybe even
think. This is a product of machine learning. So this isn't something they've programmed it to do.
They
programmed it to learn how to play Go. And every time it beats one of these masters, it gets better. And it's also, the Go masters are saying it's transforming the game. It's playing in a way that no humans have ever thought to play.
Oh,
and it's
cool.
Sort of opening their eyes to new ideas.
So at the technology level, you're right. So let me flip this back into the other space. Is the trouble that Google has is monetizing this. Apple takes whatever it's got and monetizes it like nobody else does and has this massive money lake to dig it out of any hole. Google's got all these great technologies, but they struggle to monetize them.
And in fact, of late, Ruth Porat, their new CFO, has been starting to cut off Alphabet projects and force others to lay off people. Because it doesn't seem like Google's running out of money.
No,
but there is a belt tightening going on.
There always has to be. They have to prune.
It's rationalization.
They have to rationalize and focus.
Yeah.
More wood behind less arrows.
Yeah.
You're right. I think Google does have better technology, but it doesn't have a process for monetizing that technology, and that's what Google needs to work on.
It's like Xerox PARC.
Yes.
Where they invented. Where there was a great book. Xerox invented the world and lost anyway because. They didn't Apple monetize.
Look at Google Cars. Google was way ahead of everybody else, and now all of a sudden,
Waymo. Now they're Waymo ahead of everybody else.
The rename.
All right. Actually, I do want to talk about autonomous vehicles because that was another big story. It's going on right now at the Detroit Auto Show.
Mm-hmm. I found that the news from there more interesting than CES.
Maybe.
You know, that was definitely a lot more talk.
Do you love that new Volkswagen van?
The throwback?
The throwback van. It's a concept, I think. I don't think it's real.
It's yet another throwback van from VW that will never see the market.
It is always good to go back to the past.
Yes.
Especially if the present has this whole thing with
the people don't think about the software, the fines,
and we don't want to mention.
And the diesel.
The diesel, and that's all of that stuff. We're going to take a break. Hey, good panel today. Greg Farrow is here from the Packet Pushers Network, packetpushers.net. Always good to have you
Thank
here.
Thank you.
We have Becky Worley from GMA, my dear friend from Tech TV.
I love how you refrain from using old.
I started, didn't I? But
you were good. I sensed the hesitation.
You know, friend. And Mike Elgin, who is old.
His old friend.
Yeah, he's my old friend. Always great to have all of you here. Our show today, we got a new sponsor brought to you by SeatGeek. I love SeatGeek because you get the best deal on sports, concert, and theater tickets online. What's great is, and we've been doing this a lot lately, is we say, well, who do we want to see? We go to SeatGeek and we find seats. And sometimes we've done this, it's in Denver, the best seats, so we'll go to Denver. Hey, we got a day trip to Denver. SeatGeek is different. They came along and created an amazing app, an amazing website that makes it easier than ever to buy and sell, by the way, we should add that, sell tickets. It does price comparisons for you, so you know exactly. It searches multiple ticket sites, so you know exactly what the best deal is. They do all the work. You save the time and the money. Every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, so you can see the underpriced seats. Find the best deals that fit your budget. It's a great way to shop. Now, we're going to get you a $20 rebate on your first SeatGeek purchase. So, hey, this one's on me. Go to SeatGeek and download the app. All right. Actually, best thing probably to go to the app store of your phone and search for SeatGeek, SeatGeek. Go to the settings tab, add a promo code, and use the promo code TWIT. You're going to get $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app. Enter the promo code TWIT today for $20 off. They've got Hamilton tickets. SeatGeek. Get the app on your phone and then add the promo code TWIT for $20 back on your first purchase. SeatGeek, made for geeks with seats.
My 9-year-old daughter wants to go to Hamilton so badly.
9 years old?
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. It's big. It's like the, what was the one that, was there one that Abby was into when she was at like one Broadway show that they were into?
Cats.
Maybe, or Wicked.
Wicked was big.
Yeah. It's Hamilton for the kids now. She can recite 9 songs top to bottom.
Yeah.
She just got retainers. So now she's working on doing the whole entire
thing. I'm not throwing away my
shot. I'm not throwing away my
shot. She really appreciate this segment.
She will.
No, that's great.
It's outstanding for her articulation.
Are you going to get tickets? You can get them.
I was flying when the auction happened.
It's already over?
Oh, yeah. I went in. I was like 90,000.
You need SeatGeek.
And it landed and I had to shut down my computer.
I got 4 tickets. Lisa and I will take you and your daughter. How about that? Okay, done. Deal.
Wow.
We're going to have to tell all the other people we've invited their camp.
Holy cow. Wow.
The guy who's going to do it in San Francisco is the guy who's doing it in Chicago. They got and it's the King George from Broadway, so it's going to be fun.
Oh.
I could sing it along with your daughter because I have memorized it.
King George's song is my favorite one from the whole,
You'll be back. Wait and see. Don't you remember you belong to me?
And kill all your friends and family.
That's the best line. To remind you of my love. Da 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 da
da da da da da da da da.
I think we've lost them. I think we've lost them.
Theater geeks. I mean, it's not that
hard. I'm not sure which is worse, sports ball, politics, or theater geeks.
I just decided theater.
Yeah.
This is worse.
I'm losing it over here.
Can't wait for the sequel, Trump. The music.
Consumer Reports has changed their mind. You remember Consumer Reports at first, for the first time in living memory, I think, said don't buy the new MacBook Pro because the battery life is wildly inconsistent. But anybody who's ever tested battery life or anything on a computer should have, Consumer Reports really blew it because they should have noted. For instance, they got everything from 2 hours to 18 hours in their tests. Then they did it with Chrome and it was great. At that point, they should say, red flag. Oh, something's wrong here. Maybe we shouldn't say anything yet. And I don't know if this is true or not. We were talking about this on, I think it was MacBreak Weekly. And I think it was Alex Lindsay who said, this is why I no longer trust Consumer Reports. They become linked.
When was Consumer Reports ever trustworthy when it came to technology? I think they're great for other products. Never.
Right.
Especially big technology like
but
laptops.
His contention was, and I can't disagree with him, they went to press prematurely to get
There's a lot of this methodology that I'm confused by. First of all, a couple things you should know. Consumer Reports has never been sued. Never been successfully sued.
Wow.
For a review. They told me this themselves. Number two, what confuses me about the methodology here is that when I do a test or anything for ABC, our lawyers, and we have a negative result, our lawyers insist that we go to the company, talk to them about it,
right,
and work through any concerns they may have, lest we get sued.
You don't surprise them with the article in print.
No, you get
a
comment.
Is that what happened? They didn't talk to Apple?
I don't know if that's...
it was in print, but it was online.
I don't know if they got a comment or what have you, but you would think that Apple would say, whoa, what did you do? Let's walk through this.
Well, that's exactly what Apple
did. Apple just went,
No, they did. Apple immediately responded. It was a big deal.
After the article.
And you're right. They may have gone to Apple and said, we don't care.
And Apple just went, we'll get back to you in a month.
Which is very Apple.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So it turns out that Consumer Reports, and I don't think this is an unreasonable methodology, but they use Safari. They say, we're not going to use a third-party browser to test because we want to use what comes on the platform. That's reasonable. But they did go into the developer options, and they turned off caching in Safari. Reasonably, because this test loads pages over and over again with Wi-Fi. So it's testing Wi-Fi page loads. It's a probably fairly decent test. It's not real world, but it's close enough. It turns out when you disable caching in Safari, a bug surfaces, a rare, never seen bug. And that's what happened, according to Apple. Apple fixed the bug. Consumer Reports retested and got consistently high 18-hour battery life, and now recommends the MacBook
So how long
Pros.
Has this been running?
What been running?
This furore. Four weeks?
Yeah. I think it was...
A week.
A couple of weeks.
No, longer than a week.
No, because it wasn't on the show last week, and they said 5 days ago, Apple came back with a comment about it.
So it was December. It was right after Christmas that they...
So it's the 15th today. Apple released a patch on January the 9th that fixed the issue.
Yeah.
Consumer Reports evaluated the laptops in December. So they announced it, I think, before Christmas.
Oh, okay.
So it's
Apple, before Christmas, yeah.
Taken Apple roughly a month to come up with a response. So so in terms of a damage control,
nobody
that's
looks
not good
in any of this. Apple, first and foremost, Apple came out with a laptop that is not a worthy successor to their previous Mac after all this time.
Mm. And by the way, I would say my experience, completely anecdotal experience with my MacBook Pro is that and Lisa as well, is highly inconsistent battery life. Mm. So the initial Consumer Reports measurements, in fact, despite the errors,
match my actual experience.
Back in the 90s, I was the editor of Windows Magazine.
We developed all kinds
of battery tests. And you don't have a one-dimensional test using one application.
Right.
You go after graphics. You go after this. You go after data. You go after you hit that battery with all kinds of different things. You don't just try one test in one browser. And so everything about this is flawed from both Apple's perspective and Consumer Reports. But the biggest thing to me is it has to pass a test of reasonableness. When they got really horrible battery results from Apple that were not being broadly reported in the press, they should have said, wait a minute, there's something wrong here, let's figure it out. Not, oh, we don't recommend this product. I thought it was really irresponsible of Consumer Reports.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this MacBook is a dud, and we just need people should avoid it if possible.
Right.
Now, I understand
the waters are very much muddied now, though, because Consumer Reports is now recommending it and saying, oh, no, the battery life's great, which isn't right either.
No. And too many people like you are giving us apocryphal comments saying, I'm getting inconsistent results and Apple's solution
was... It's not apocryphal. It's true.
Yeah.
It's anecdotal, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many people are throwing out comments here and there. And
I see them all over.
Yeah. And you're going like, what's going on? Whereas previous laptops have been really bang on the money.
Battery life is hard to test, though, right?
Yes.
Because everybody uses it differently. In fact, the fact that I don't... You know, I used the MacBook Pro when it first came out, maybe in the first week. I used it on MacBook Weekly without a plug, and it died after 2 hours. Mm. I didn't freak out because there's all sorts of reasons you could have crappy battery life, and then the next day it was
Google
6 hours.
Chrome, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chrome apparently about 15% better, higher battery usage.
Yeah.
It could have been that, and I was using Chrome. It could have been it was brand new, so it was still Spotlight indexing. There's all sorts of things. and I've just kind of lived with it, but consumers, I mean, we do want a number from the company that is at least apples to apples so that we know that, well, if it's going to be more than last time, I know what I got in the last one. It should be relatively. Right.
But there has to be a connection with reality. We all have multiple devices. We all have a sense. We walk around with the sense of, oh, my laptop gets really great battery life. My phone, not so much. And after using it a while, you get a sense whether battery life is a problem or you're kind of thrilled with battery life. Yep. And so the tests have to reflect that. So it has to be very, very broadly done. You have to be very careful about how you do it. And you always have to tweak it over time so that the experience of using and owning this device matches the general sense you gave.
But Apple cited that this was one specific flaw in Safari and that they had turned it off, that Consumer Reports had turned this feature off. Right. And they do this with all their testing. Right. So it was consistent.
Yep. Why isn't Apple doing the tests that Consumer Reports are doing? Because they're public.
And Apple tried to downplay the bug saying it's an obscure usage model. I don't think that's that obscure to turn off caching. I don't think that's...
That's not obscure. And more importantly, if you go and talk to HPE or Dell about how they test their consumer laptops, guess what they do?
Right.
They go and run the Consumer Reports test to make sure it's valid. Right. So I think a few things here. One, Apple isn't actually doing its basic due diligence and saying, this is going to be tested by Consumer Reports. Why don't we do this? Right? Failure. Second, their reaction was not to actually do anything about it and just throw up the walls and pretend that it's not a problem and blame Consumer Reports. Third, Consumer Reports should have said, yes, look, we're getting inconsistent results. There could be they shouldn't have been so didactic and locked into a position and said, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And finally, why did Apple take so long to fix what is a fairly small problem? That bug should have been really easy for them to find.
Yep. So who's at fault? Both?
Both.
Okay, so Consumer Reports went to press too early with this, probably.
There were red flags when you read their press release. You went, wait a minute, whoa, Chrome had great battery life, but Safari didn't? Okay, hold on here. Right.
There is a huge level of Apple hubris that's perceived in them not getting back to them and having enough dialogue.
Apple hubris? Come on.
That's every time, right? That's nonstop. Yep.
Well, what's interesting is that I won't name news organizations, but I know that Apple is starting to mandate that each news organization has one point of contact.
Yeah.
Because they feel inundated. They feel that there are too many requests.
I would frankly love a point of contact. One's better than none.
A maximum of one, Leo.
So at a certain practical point of view, that's an incredibly childish approach.
Yeah.
So the way that Apple is running their marketing is they're running a very small marketing team. Mm-hmm. Instead of spreading out the team and having enough people to cope with the inbound requests and hiring in enough people, they're saying, no, what we'll
do... You deal with it.
You deal with it, right? Hold the media at
arm's
length.
It's so interesting how closely Apple's run to the Trump transition. There is... And even the press conference where they had the people in the front row applauding, that's what Apple does, right? It's really interesting here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everything is great, huge, superlative.
That's where Trump learned it from watching Apple announce.
Well, Apple is really good at marketing, right? Yeah. But I think that arrogance in the long run hurts you a little bit.
I think it's starting to catch up. Like the you're talking about neuro-linguistic programming. So Apple is a straight-out neuro-linguistic programming in every single one of their decks.
Explain that.
So neuro-linguistic programming is when you use keywords to trigger association. So when you use the word, it's fantastic, and you repeat the word, it's fantastic. And then you repeat the word, it's so amazing, and it's fantastic.
Which Apple does. If you do a cut down of their speeches, it's like boom, boom, boom,
so
boom.
So by just continually repeating and reinforcing the same word, you're making sure that the customer or the person in the audience is actually being programmed to walk away with the perception of fantastic.
And so to learn more about this, you need to read Scott Adams' blog. He's the creator of Dilbert, and he's been going on and on about this for a year or two.
The funny thing is your conscious mind recognizes how stupid it is.
Yes.
But it still works.
Yes. Yeah, well, there's several examples of this. One of the ways is if you put three colored objects in front of somebody and you want them to pick a single color, what you do is just use rhyming words with the color, and they'll actually be triggered to a statistically significant degree to pick the color that you want them to pick.
Wow. Right?
And it's a standard con trick. But so Apple's using these types of tricks in its marketing. I think it wears out after a while.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that, you know, when a politician comes into power, you see them, you know, use a certain set of media tricks, and all of a sudden people go, like when Obama came to power, he was very much like, you know, we're going to be, and then all of a sudden he started to move into a centrist position because he wasn't able to control the message, he wasn't able to bring the right wing along with him, blah, blah, blah. So you end up, these media tricks wear out, and I think Apple's media position is starting to struggle. It's certainly not able to cope like it used to be. Which exodus of staff is an issue.
Scott Adams calls it the moist robot hypothesis.
Yes.
We are moist robots. In other words, we're biological, but we're also free will is an illusion, and we can be programmed once you understand our human user
interface. And I think it goes back to post-truth, which is we want emotion instead of information.
Yeah. But from a technology perspective, I think it has to be credit has to be given to Steve Jobs, who I don't know how he arrived at it, but he was the genius and master at this whole idea. Every time he gave an interview or announced a product, you walked away with something in your head that he wanted to put in your head. One of the most casual examples of this is when he went before the Cupertino City Council and said, we'd like to build a new headquarters. Looks like a spaceship. Mm-hmm. And since that moment, we've all called it the Spaceship Campus. He planted this wonderful, fun idea around his building, and he just did it like
it's
a bodily
just another
function.
Building.
He was so good at it.
It's just another building, right? Mm-hmm. Just happens to be a bit fancy. And there's actually a building exactly like it in Oxford in England. It's actually a linear accelerator. It actually uses it for an optical light source as a research.
Well, it's a lot like the GCHQ or one of the
No, GCHQ doesn't look anything like that. I live in the town where GCHQ is. I promise you it doesn't look anything like Apple's, not at all. But if you go to Oxford in the Rutherford Appleton Research Laboratory, you'll actually find the laser light source. It is a straight out 100% Apple copied that building as far as I'm concerned.
I think that there's a parallel between Steve Jobs and Trump in their communication styles. They kind of look angry.
Wrong.
They look angry, but say positive things often. And that you know, when Trump's got his brow furrowed, and then he says, it was amazing, it was terrific. You know, it's really powerful when an angry person says positive things.
Yep.
I always got that vibe from... I got that vibe from Steve Jobs, that he was sort of, you know...
He was angry
down,
at you.
Yes, well, that was your fault.
I don't think he's constantly angry, but he's angry at you.
Well, he had an intensity.
Trump doesn't smile. At least Jobs smiled.
Right, but he has an intensity.
When a scary person is being nice,
you're
powerful. More receptive. Yeah, exactly.
You know what scares me a little bit is the notion that Steve Jobs and others might be consciously using these techniques of persuasion. It bothers me a little bit. I mean... I'm aware of NLP. I've been aware of it almost my whole life, but I consciously choose to, at least attempt to not use it because I feel it's manipulative. And it bothers me that people that I respect, like Steve Jobs, I feel like the word is stoop to using these kinds of trickery.
But when you're successful with a style of communications, that's a reinforcement to continue using those styles of communication.
Yeah.
So if those successes jibe with your internal value structure, it doesn't matter.
And both Trump and Jobs persuade by reframing the conversation. You'd say, you know, Steve Jobs, why are you killing Flash? Why are you doing this to Flash? It's unfair to your partner, Adobe, blah, blah, blah. He would say, you know, we have limited resources and we need to put all of our resources behind technologies that we feel have a future. So we're looking at the future. And does Flash have a future or does HTML5 have a future? And so pretty soon you're seeing it from his perspective. It's not about his relationship to another company.
What both of them never do is they never defend their position.
Right.
They always attack the next position.
Exactly.
Right? And so you instead of defending and saying, look, Flash is a battery hog and it makes my iPhone run
you
for
don't
half
do
a day.
That. You don't do that.
You don't defend your position. You attack the next position and say, I'm going over there while you're over here futzing around pretending and talking about it. And really it comes down to what I call the don't tell me what you did for me yesterday. Tell me what you're going to do for me tomorrow. I don't want to hear about today's problems.
I'm not
I don't want to hear
that.
About yesterday's
I think
problems.
That's not necessarily manipulative or bad.
Unfortunately, that catches up with you because if you don't solve today's problem or you don't manage
today's
problem.
You're holding it wrong.
Yeah.
You end up holding a bag full of promises.
Yes. Yeah. And eventually the promises turn into hot air and start like the current MacBook Pro, right?
Yeah.
Clearly not an astonishing advance, even though they got up on stage and said, this is the best.
Are you blaming Steve Jobs for the current MacBook
no,
Pro?
No, I'm saying they got up on stage and said, it's the best MacBook we've ever made.
Right.
It's got this amazing touch bar.
You couldn't live up to that.
I would blame the absence of Steve Jobs for the MacBook Pro. I think that if, you know, and people throw this out all the time and it's probably unfair, but I think that if Steve Jobs were alive today, that wouldn't have shipped.
It shouldn't have been on stage. It should have been just a point release. It should have bumped without an announcement. And the touch bar
shouldn't because the touch bar that's a major product.
I don't think the touch bar would have made it into the product of Steve Jobs.
No, he would have waited until the
entire bottom of the clamshell was touchscreen.
Yes,
that would have been a Steve Jobs.
By the way, the rumor is that's the next thing.
I hope it is.
All OLED screens. And who's doing that? Toshiba or somebody is making a laptop.
The one laptop per child concept screen. Before it went away, that was the concept. You had screens on both sides. You could have it flatten a tablet. You could have it book.
I like that.
It's great. It's a great idea. People are resistant to non-mechanical keyboards.
Manufacturing OLEDs at scale is an enormous challenge, and whether that'll ever happen or not. But, you know, not all of the problems in the MacBook Pro are Apple's making. They're Intel CPUs. The Intel production of CPUs has been problematic.
Intel's fumbled considerably. In fact, I think Intel it has lost the game. I think ARM is about to take over. What do you think? Now, this is really up your alley.
So I think we're seeing things like, you know, last time I was on the show, we talked about the new types of RAM, the permanent RAM, the SDRAM. And the challenges that Intel's now got is that those permanent RAM options aren't able to be serviced at speed by the CPU.
Right.
So the bus between the CPU and the memory isn't fast enough to take advantage of this NVRAM capability. And they've started producing it and getting it out there, but it's only seeing like a 10 times performance improvement. So instead of these things being 1,000 times faster,
which it would be,
which it should be,
the bus is fast enough.
But the NVMe interface has to run over electronics, and it's just too slow. And we were supposed to be seeing silicon photonics by now. So this idea that the theory was a decade ago.
Instead of electrons.
Yeah, so instead of the chip talking to the graphics chip or the chip talking to the DRAM, shouldn't be an electrical signal propagating down a copper trace. Because the way that electricity, I'm going to try for a metaphor here and just stretch it ever so slightly, but if you know in a pipe and you've got water running down the pipe, the water actually sticks to the side of the pipe.
Right.
So the pipe prevents the water from flowing properly. Right. And when you take the pressure off, the water keeps flowing because it's got momentum. Well, electric current is roughly the same. And so there's only so fast you can drive the electric current. There's only so fast you can trigger the edges and create signals. And it's actually incredibly slow. It's like half the speed of light. As a result, and you can only get so many clock cycles. We need to be into optical communications between CPU to memory, CPU to storage, CPU to network. There should be silicon photonics on the Intel die. And
one
way
Intel's tried to solve this, and all the chip manufacturers, is to bring them approximately physically closer.
Yes.
The shorter the distance, at least you get less of that effect.
So the shorter your distance, the higher you can increase the clock speed.
And they're putting it in the chip.
Yeah, you can increase the hertz, the signaling rate.
Right.
On the thing, the shorter that you go.
Right, but that's limited too. You can only go so far.
Well, that's part of every time you shrink the die, you actually reduce the distance between the transistors.
Right.
And now we're hitting finite, at 14 nanometers. We're supposed to be at 10. Intel's having troubles making
Intel can't get to 10. Oddly enough, Qualcomm has announced a 10 nanometer FinFET.
Yep.
The 835.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that that's a fair prognostication that ARM is about to consume the.
I think Intel's struggling to make it work financially.
The final victory of risk processing.
It might come down to some very obscure metallic, material science about, what type of doping and what type of metal substrates they're using. And they may have made a decision 5 years ago to go down a particular technology. I'm not an expert enough here.
No, but that happened with the Itanium. We saw that happen exactly with the Itanium, where they went down the wrong road and ended up with a product that didn't work.
Yes.
And they had to rewind. And they were fortunate they had a Skunk Works in Israel that was working on something better and saved their
But
bacon.
You're talking about, to build a silicon fab is a $5 billion investment over a 7 to 10-year cycle.
More now. I think it's 10.
Yeah.
Is this a healthy duopoly kind of thing that's really driving it forward, or is this a winner-takes-all situation?
It's a winner-takes-all. Because it's so expensive to make these fabs, like the silicon fab.
These companies are really in the business of building fabs. That's really the product.
But that's what's interesting, because ARM is not. ARM is a fabless design.
But they're taking the ARM designs and then manufacturing them at TSMC.
Yeah. Qualcomm does have to build fabs or use TSMC.
It uses TSMC. TSMC has managed to build a 10-nanometer fab, but I haven't gone deep enough into the technology to know what type of silicon compound. There's a whole pile of, gallium arsenide, and I'm just not going to track the technology at that sort of level because, quite honestly, who cares?
Well, we have Kevin. If Kevin Crewell is listening, Kevin, if you want to call in, you can. He's a former editor of Silicon Micro magazine.
So in networking today, we're now building components we have a piece of silicon which can lase directly. So instead of reusing silicon, electrical signal, into a laser, which is usually a crystal, which then is excited and transmits the laser, they're now building the laser directly into the silicon chip. So that's the 100 gig Ethernet modules that you're doing today as silicon photonics.
Wow, that's amazing.
But that is not – that materials that does the lasing, that actually is silicon that can lase and transmit, is not fit for CPUs. So you can't suddenly build that silicon photonics component in the same die that a CPU is, which is what we need. So – to some extent, that's where the next advance is going to be, and Intel doesn't seem to be winning there.
I think also at a higher level, the fact that Microsoft has announced Windows on ARM, I think the world is moving towards, and one of the advantages ARM has is better battery life. And that, it's funny, I love Marcus Brownlee's quote this week. MKBHD, of course, you know who he is. We've had him on, and his YouTube channel is huge. He said, all I wanted for 2016, or maybe he said 2017, was bigger batteries. All I got was a missing headphone jack.
I saw that tweet.
And right on, yeah, right?
Yeah, that's,
it's as if we're, it's as if the consumers, the
Can
buyers
I point
are
out how much I hate Bluetooth headphones right here? Like, yeah.
But you know what? Those
awful.
AirPods work. They did solve the pairing issue.
Yeah.
And the quality issue is the better quality.
I am not sticking a piece of plastic tube in my ear, hard plastic tube in my ear, no matter how much.
Yes, you are. I like my AirPods. They actually fit my ear, though. If they don't fit your ear, you're out of luck because
I actually appreciate the fact that Apple's able to push people beyond what they think they want right now. And again, this is a conversation that we've had on your shows in many different ways, but basically people don't know that they don't want a floppy drive. People don't know that, you know, people always whine and complain.
I think that people know they want headphone jacks, and they're right.
No, they don't. The headphone jacks, it's an analog technology. Once you make it digital, magic happens, and you have a new revolution.
Yeah, like DRM.
It underestimates the human nature to lose everything.
Meanwhile, how do I charge the thing when I'm listening?
Exactly.
But it's a temporary problem. Eventually, I'll be super grateful that they forced this kicking and screaming into this world. They did the same thing with on-screen keyboards.
He's such an optimist.
Nobody forgets that when Apple 10 years ago released the iPhone, people said, this is crazy. Nobody can use an on-screen keyboard. Give me a BlackBerry that has a real keyboard.
Yeah. No, that's
now
right.
Now it sounds like crazy talk because all phones have an on-screen keyboard. We were wrong and Apple was right. And I think that's the same thing with AirPods.
Apple may win because already many Android manufacturers have announced no headphone jacks. Doesn't look like the Galaxy S8 will have a headphone jack.
Well, the reason for that, of course, is mechanical because once you pierce the edge of the shell,
right.
You can't. You have all these structural designs.
And Apple also said it had to do with room in the thing. If you're putting an analog amplifier.
But there's a 2.5 millimeter jack instead of a 3.5 millimeter jack, right? So there's an argument for both ways. My problem is that the Bluetooth standard is so crap that it's simply not fit for purpose. And why are we even bothering? It's like going to Bluetooth isn't going to create a new Bluetooth standard for at least 2 more years. So we're now stuck with substandard technology that we're being forced to use by a company that wants to drive me in a particular direction. That's my complaint. Not the fact that the jack's been removed, fine, but Apple should be in the Bluetooth body, making them make a decent Bluetooth standard that actually works.
Well, they are the largest manufacturer of Bluetooth headphones in the world, so they have some clout in this space. Yep. And they claim this W1 chip that they invented for the AirPods is the key to all this. I have to admit, pairing is much better. Mm. You don't get the dropout, but there are some issues. There are some issues. But
as long as you're not poor.
Yeah, oh, don't be poor.
That's the also one that drives me crazy.
Don't be poor in any of this stuff.
Just when you get $14 headphones that actually sound decent, we have to go to $130 ones that you're going to lose more frequently.
Yeah, that is a
Women space. Aren't. 85% of AirPod customers are men, which
really?
I think is a very weird.
Why is that?
I don't know. Why is that, Becky?
You can at least wear them with your hair in front of them, and nobody knows you look dorky.
Congratulations, you now represent all of women. You now represent them at all women.
They actually have earrings that will hold the AirPods if you drop them.
We don't get many women around here. Would you explain?
I just think it's practical. They're too expensive for too little gain.
Women are too smart to fall for these. That's all.
Pretty much.
They also, the reason my wife won't wear them, Lisa doesn't like them, because there's one size, and it's too big for her tiny little ear holes.
Yep.
So
That's a problem.
Yeah, customization. It has to be, there's a difference between personalization and customization.
Right, yeah.
And Apple doesn't customize, but it does personalize, right? So Apple devices are very personal. People get very intimate with them in terms of, everybody's iPhone is...
I'm not getting intimate with those AirPods. I'm sorry. You can say that, but I'm not.
Never say never, Leo.
I'm not that desperate. Our show, we got a great panel, having fun, lots more to talk about. Greg Farrow's here from the Packet Pushers Network, packetpushers.net, from GMA. Good morning, America. Becky Worley, who's up at 4 a.m. almost every morning talking to America in her jammies.
Only on the bottom.
You do
Stay
it from
classy San Diego.
You do it from your house sometimes.
Not anymore. I go into San Francisco every time.
Oh, that's awful.
I like it better.
Well, yeah.
There's no traffic at that hour,
There's
too.
No traffic. I don't have to manage all the, oh, gosh.
It's a better quality, too.
It's better quality. I don't have to be the technician, cameraman, and audio person.
Free coffee.
Right? Actually, they have little chocolates in the lobby.
Ooh.
And every time I finish my live shots, I take one piece of chocolate.
Just one.
Just one. But do you know what I think of when the alarm goes off at 2:30 a.m.?
I can't wait to get to chocolate.
It's amazing the power of small rewards.
That's right.
Small rewards.
That's like a mouse in a box.
And for me, it's a pillow. I wake up at 2:30 in the morning.
I think of my pillow.
What the hell?
Whatever happened to my pillow? What is this giant marshmallow I dreamed about that I ate?
Those aren't pillows.
Yeah, we know the joke. Also, Mike Elgin.
You have to get up pretty early in the morning to fool her on a joke.
She knows them all. She knows them all. Our show today brought to you by the best solution for people who love magazines. I still love magazines. Almost every month there is a great article in Rolling Stone or Vanity Fair or Atlantic or the National Geographic or the New Yorker. An article I'm dying to read. I can't always read online. A lot of times I can't read online. If it's National Geographic, I want to see the pictures, the photos. Well, now I can get it all on my iPad or my iPhone or my Android device with Texture. I don't have to get the expensive newsstand edition. I don't have to worry about cluttering my house, piling up magazines on my coffee table. Texture gets more than 200 of the best magazines in the world and delivers them right to your iPad where you can read them. It's just like reading the actual magazine. You have all the same pages. You turn the page. There's bonus features that you can't get in a magazine, like video and many of these. It's very affordable, much cheaper than buying a magazine at the newsstand or subscribing, and you just don't have the clutter. Plus, because you're going to get so many magazines and Texture is searchable, you can find so much stuff, find new magazines, new articles. Back issues are there as well, of course. Now, Texture is normally $9.99 a month, which is really a great deal. That's the cost of two magazines on the newsstand. I like to take the sex quizzes in Cosmo. I don't know about you, but that's just fun for me.
I always fail them.
Yeah. Oh. Almost always. I'm trying to. One day I'll pass. But that's something. I'm not going to buy Cosmo for that. But it's fun when you have it. Or People Magazine. Or, you know, it's fun
New
when
Yorker
you have
for
it.
The cartoons, although everybody should read that cover to cover anyway.
I love the New Yorker. And this is a great way to get it. You don't need a
subscription.
And, of
course, Fast Company, which has some of the most brilliant writers.
Great writers.
Brilliant.
Mike Elgin in there.
Oh, my gosh.
Cooking Light. I love it. Anyway, here's the deal. We're going to get you a 14-day free trial. Why subscribe to a couple of magazines when you can have them all on your smartphone or tablet? I favorite the magazines I want. They automatically download. So even if I'm disconnected in the air in a cabin somewhere, I can read my favorite magazines. Texture is giving you a free trial for 2 weeks when you go to texture.com/twit. Texture, TEXTURE.com, just like text in a magazine. I don't know what the URE is like. Texture.com/twit. 2 weeks free right now. We had a fun week. We had a lot of good stuff. Specials from CES. And, well, I'll tell you what. Take a look.
Previously on Twit.
Megan and I teased on this very show that someday we would totally switch phones for a month.
I sent it to Chinese so that it's even more complicated.
Great. You really set me up for success here. Thanks a lot, Megan.
Home Theater Geeks.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek. This week, I'm roaming the floor at CES 2017.
We developed a technology that uses little actuators that vibrate the panel and make basically a stereo speaker system, and the voice comes from the screen, not from below or from the sides.
The new screensavers.
This is the bridge, a mixed reality headset for the iPhone.
What's new and special about it is you actually can map your environment and then do AR or mixed reality, where you bring characters or whatever into the world with you.
Don't go in there, Dad! It's a fake! It's a trap!
Oh, that's so cool.
Isn't that cool?
No
way. OMG, you put a hole in our wall.
I didn't know there was a bookstore.
That is freaking cool.
Twit. Now, where'd I put my iPhone?
Silver lining is hopefully by the end of this adventure, we will embrace you back with our green Android arms, and we will have converted Miss Maroney.
You one would think. However, I have noticed ever since I've started with iOS that I'm really popular here at work. Lots of people want to talk to me. And
that's what happens when you buy an Apple.
We stand around and we talk about like what you can do with your phone. Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah. Oh, it's really cool.
Oh Lord. Yeah. That's actually fun. For a month, Jason and Megan are exchanging. So Jason, host of All About Android, is using an iPhone, and Megan, host of iOS Today, is using an Android phone. She's using a Pixel. And it's really interesting to watch.
She seems to be hating it more you would think.
But it's a bit of a struggle because Android, there's a big learning curve, frankly, much more so than the iPhone. Yep. So I think she's struggling a little bit with it. I love Android. I think the Pixel is an amazing phone.
I think the real lesson, people always bash the other platform, but it's a lot of that is just you're just used to the way your own platform is, and you try to use it, and it doesn't work. Right. It doesn't seem intuitive.
Phones is phones.
Phones is phones.
Megan is here with a look at what's to come this week. Megan?
Thanks, Leo. Here's a look at just a few of the stories we'll be watching in the week ahead. Today is Wikipedia Day. On January 15th, 2001, the crowdsourced encyclopedia launched to the world, which means that today is its 16th birthday, and it would like you to buy it a car or give a donation. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler resigns this week. He's already given his final speech in which he gave one last plea in support of net neutrality, which will arguably be his greatest legacy. This week, we officially say goodbye to six-second video phenomenon Vine. Twitter has confirmed that they will shut it down on January 19th and convert it to the Vine camera. That's an app that will let you record Vine videos. The Vine community, however, and the social network will be no more. Netflix announces earnings after the close of market this Wednesday. We'll be watching for revenue, contribution margin, and subscriber growth numbers, which are the big questions for Netflix since they continue to avoid the advertising model. Jason Howell and I will cover all of this and a whole lot more all week on Tech News Today. That's recorded each and every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific. And that is a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Megan. Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, midnight UTC for Tech News Today. I didn't know Wikipedia is celebrating its 16th birthday.
Wow. Tonight.
That's amazing. This actually was so iPhone is 10 years old.
Yeah.
This week, the video game industry began in 1968 with the patent that made TV video games possible. Ended up being the Magnavox Odyssey. Do you remember that? I don't think anyone remembers the Odyssey. No. That was a terrible, terrible thing. What else? This was the big anniversaries to this day.
Yeah.
I still think Wikipedia is the most amazing example of what the internet's capable of.
Yep.
Just amazing. Yep. And bravo.
Spirit of volunteerism.
Right? It is the wisdom and idiocy of crowds.
And then there's Twitter.
Yes.
Well, you like Twitter.
It's so funny how
the
wide...
The ladies love the Twitter.
The pendulum swings so drastically when I consider Twitter.
Me too.
You know, there's so
much love-hate thing.
There's so much vitriol, and yet there's so much freedom, and they go so clearly hand in hand.
So I'm a huge Twitter fan because I don't have to put my personal information into it.
Yeah.
Whereas if I go into Facebook or Google or any of the other LinkedIn, I have to overshare all of my personal data. And, you know, quite honestly, Microsoft-owned LinkedIn, I don't trust Facebook. I don't think anybody trusts Facebook. And, you know, I've got all sorts of, you know, ideas about that. But on Twitter, you can be whatever you like. And
can I share something that scared me this week, which was a website that I did not know exist called Family Tree Now?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. A lot of people shared that with
me. Holy cow.
It doesn't have me.
Yeah, it does.
No, it doesn't.
It does, because not only did I find you, I found your kids on it. It was unbelievable. So this thing is an incredible linkage of databases that will say who your known associates are and your previous addresses. I found the address that you and Jennifer lived at back when you lived in San Francisco.
I wonder why it didn't find me the last time I used it.
And what's different about this than some of the other Find People Fast and all of those sites, completely free and actually very elegant in its design. I was totally tripped out by how immediate it was. I was able to search tons of people.
Wow, this
it
is really too.
The stalking on this site is scary. And
it's got every address I've ever lived at.
Yeah. You can opt
that
out.
That would actually be kind of helpful because I've been quite a place.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's really interesting. Wow.
Wait a minute. This is amazing. Where do they get this information? Is this from, this has to be from credit records.
I have no idea. This is the stuff you would normally pay for. You'd have to create a login at one of these sites, and then you would pay for these individual
reports.
Normally,
this is the kind of stuff you pay for.
This is a scary stalking tool. You can opt out. I opted out on Friday, and my information has been removed. But just a little anecdote.
But this is a genealogy site.
Supposedly. But these aren't dead people. These are living people. Now, I sublet my apartment in Seattle back in the early 90s. The guy stiffed me. I sued him in small claims court. He never paid. I've been searching for him for 20 years.
Did you find him?
Hired a private investigator. Found him on this site. He lives 10 miles away from me.
What? Are you going to go visit him?
Searched his name on LinkedIn.
2:30 in the morning.
Guess where he works. guess he'll be getting a garnishment notice from me. Wow. I have been looking on and off using all of these sites for 20 years and a private investigator, and only this found him.
But now you have to find a new hobby.
You know, I got a lot of emails from people, and I saw a lot of tweets about Family Tree Now, and I thought I searched. I guess I didn't do it right, because you're right.
Is this related to a lot of 23andMe?
No.
It's a woman in Roseville outside of Sacramento who started this database and has... it's incredibly elegant. It's really good. Too good. And totally free and easy.
There's a scary lot of information on here, and boy, I'm puzzled by where this information is coming from. But I think really it's probably just collating information that's been spread around.
They really don't talk much about the background. It just says we like taking services that typically cost money and making them free so everybody can use them.
Some technology veterans. We used to work at the NSA.
I think it's address-based because it like went all the way back to the known associates were like roommates that I'd had at different times or like the...
That would mean it's credit reporting. Those are the credit agencies know all those places.
Maybe.
But how would they get it out of the credit agencies?
Probably got it off the hackers. Those credit agencies are hugely insecure.
Actually, that's an interesting point. Collating a bunch of hacked
If you just
databases.
Collect a bunch of hacked databases, you could probably build a substantial part of
this. On the dark web, go shopping for...
Well, that's the thing that scares
it's
me about this
really
not being...
creepy because this is their About Us page, and it really pretty much doesn't say anything except here's their kitchen.
Doesn't give an address.
It's in Roseville, California.
Where's the board of directors?
Right.
It says no names of anybody, obviously. These are real pictures of their ancestors. Yeah, a lot of help that is. That's it.
Found those on Google.
This sounds like the CIA to me.
But also, because there's no sign-in, because there's no CAPTCHA, think of how easy this is to scrape.
Oh, yeah. You could automate this real quick.
So that is...
And why is it free? Well, you do pay if you want more, right?
They have ads that run that look exactly like records that are a part of their own design, and you click on it, and you don't even realize it's a paid product until you get way deep in it, and then they want to charge you. And so, again, the good thing about it is you can opt out, and that did work, but creepy.
Mm. Well, let me just sign in with Facebook and give them a little more information.
Oh, that's good. Good idea.
About me.
Let's just do that. Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyways...
U.S. only. That's the good news.
Yep.
It's funny, the things we worry about that are, we perceive, you know, government
Well, everybody's
actors,
so worried about Google's and our privacy, when they're reading our
and
Gmail.
The NSA.
They just go to this.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. That stuff is out there.
Yeah.
Creepy, right?
That's Facebook class data. Although Facebook's got a much more greater reach. They're actually tracking much more metadata about you. Like, they follow you around. They actually lay cookies in your browser and follow you around.
And that's why I'm of the strong opinion that Mark Zuckerberg is going to run for president in 2020. this is one of my favorite stories, that both Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos suddenly woke up one day and said, it was that easy? We ought to do this.
Yeah. Full Tony Stark stuff, right?
Yep.
And what is the conflict of interest if the guy who runs Facebook, who can clearly totally manipulate the election if he should choose to, runs for president? He will be 35 like the month before the filing deadline. I mean, it all fits into place. And it makes perfect sense. And I can even see... By the way, he's going on a 50-state tour to meet people in all 50 states this year.
Mm. Yeah.
On the back of a train... I'd rather be CEO of Facebook than the president. Why would anybody want to be president?
And that's what everybody says when I say this. They say, well, why would you want the demotion?
Right.
Yeah.
He's already the emperor of the world.
but
it'd be useful to have a 2 million man army.
It'd be great to have
There's certain things as a private industry you don't have nukes.
He doesn't have nuclear bombs,
I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't know Mark Zuckerberg, from what I know about Mark Zuckerberg, by the way, this article is by Nick Bilton, is that he's a do-gooder. I think he's I am not of the opinion that he's the evil incarnate of a lot of people. I think he really wants to make the world a better place. And I could see, what better bully pulpit? Right?
Can we argue about that? I don't think he's a do-gooder at all. So basically
his wants to give away his entire fortune.
Of course. Why not? Right. Exactly.
How could that not be doing good?
Because he stole it from somebody else.
Money can buy you things. Okay. It can buy you material comforts. It can buy you security. It can buy you fun and frivolity. It can buy you lots of things. And one of the things it can buy you is influence. And he has enough money 10 times over to buy all the things that money can buy. What he doesn't have the money to buy is to have much more influence in how the world works. And we all like, I like solar power better than other types of things. We all have opinions that we
want. You have a pet project.
Yeah, I'm not so crazy about GMOs. I have all these different opinions. Right. What he's doing is he's promising to take his money and buy the things that currently his money can't buy. And that is, he's going to throw all this money into things so that the world works the way he'd like it to work, whatever that is. And Bill Gates has done a similar thing to that. But essentially, we all saw The Matrix. What do men with power want? They want more power. Mm. So he's spending his billions to put himself in a position to overrule other interests in the world so that his ideas and his views and his desires
Larry
win
Page
the day.
Wanted an island so he wouldn't be regulated. He even said it. At a Google I.O. He said, I want an island. I don't know all this interference.
Well, you're talking about Mark Zuckerberg. He after doing a big speech, anti-Trump speech about building walls, he went to Hawaii and built this big wall.
It was not a big wall.
It was a wall.
It is a smallish wall.
To keep out the riffraff.
3.5 feet.
Right.
I could climb a 3.5 foot wall.
And that wall is not comparable at all, and I know from firsthand knowledge. So.
Okay. Becky knows.
I think the point you're trying to make, Mike, is that the Silicon Valley hierarchy is so full of itself that
that's
it believes
exactly
it can go and
true.
Fix the world. So they're going to go and take their $1 billion
and
they're going to
go
and shove it down other people's throats.
I'll go even further.
And I
almost
think becoming
because
president
because
is a good way to do that.
And they believe they're the smartest people in the room, and most often they lack the empathy of a dead snake.
That's exactly right.
They are incredibly foolish individuals.
They're rabid capitalists lining their pockets, but they want to couch their aspirations in this, like, we're saving the world.
The only reason I don't think he's a devil is because I'm somewhat aligned with the things he wants, right?
Right. So you agree with him. But if you disagreed with him,
then I'd be
the
very
devil.
Upset.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point.
How does that differ from Warren Buffett?
Warren Buffett will not run for president. I think Mark Zuckerberg is going to run for president.
But in terms
of
doing
Buffett
the most
doesn't
good
also
for the most people...
He doesn't have a vision for doing good for people.
He does. He's giving money to the Gates.
I think Buffett is somewhat
humble. So he doesn't have a vision. He doesn't want to impose his vision.
He plays humble well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I disagree.
You nailed
it
with your description of the Silicon Valley icons.
Yeah.
They are often the smartest. I remember Steve was
this way. They're
often smart. Steve Jobs was like the smartest person in the room. That didn't make them a good person.
Yeah.
But they sometimes people who are so smart they can't see the failings.
Yes.
And they believe that they are a good person, empathetic, and all this stuff. They don't understand that they in fact lack that.
Yeah.
And so
that's exactly what got us Brexit and Trump.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is and Nick's article says he wants to be emperor is a phrase that's become common among people who've known Mark over the years. He points out some other data points. Remember, Mark got religion, or at least didn't deny that he was an atheist, right? he says, I believe religion is very important. He didn't say, I am religious, but that is a checkbox you have to check if you're running for president.
His sister's...
Orthodox.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just hired President Campaign's former campaign manager, David Plouffe, to lead policy and advocacy for the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative.
Who's been at Twitter all this time, and so he's been in the private sector.
He has, as I mentioned, announced he's going to meet people in every state, and maybe the biggest giveaway, when Facebook reorganized so that he could give all this money to the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, it was set up in such a way that he could continue to run Facebook even if he took public office.
Well,
wow.
So conflict of interest is not the issue one would consider.
Well, but okay, but that's interesting. So I think that this is about, they're going to watch President-elect Trump very carefully to see if he can navigate that conflict of interest.
Do you perceive Zuckerberg as having an ideological bent at a severe angle to the president-elect?
Well, that would be at least for Bezos and possibly for Zuckerberg. That would also be a stimulus, right? Oh, I never even thought I could do this. I don't like what I'm seeing. It's about time for the smartest man in the room to run the place.
Yes.
Right?
That's what I think is happening.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that the smartest man in the room is the best person in the room.
No, empathy is is important.
So
he's thinking, I, without any help from the Winklevi, ushered into existence this magnificent Facebook.com. And so those idiots in Washington, they don't know what they have coming. I'm going to go in there and fix everything. This is like when Eisenhower went into office, Truman said, poor Ike, he's used to the military. You give orders and people do it. He's like, here, and when you're president, it's almost impossible to get anybody to do anything.
No, in fact, I love that. That's Obama said that, and I've forgotten who else said that. The power of the presidency is merely the power to persuade.
Right.
But I don't think people like Zuckerberg or Bezos are thinking that way.
If you have a publicly held company, I think you feel hamstrung all the time by responsibilities
you've
got.
You've got
a board.
You've got,
your board.
Yeah.
But those things exist for good reason. So if you cast your mind back to Victorian era politics, say around the 17th and 18th century, when the incredibly wealthy people who'd built up, you know, enormous wealth on the backs of slaves or trade or exploitation of the Far East or India or, you know, the colonies down in Africa and stuff like that. And then suddenly they developed a conscience and started to invest their money in making life good for their workers. And example, in England, during that Victorian era, the reason that they started to introduce school meals was not because they wanted to be good for the children. What they actually were concerned about was, one, that the children were starving by the time they and they were growing up too small.
Yeah, they're not good workers.
They're not good workers, and they're also not good not good soldiers. Because they're not physically strong. Yeah. So they literally instituted feeding of the poor as a way to ensure the perpetuation of their positions of privilege.
I see it.
But clothed it in generosity. Now, what we're seeing is massive wealth distorts your perception of reality, I think.
The rich are not like you and me.
Well, they can do anything. So if you could do anything, and you were in a time where you felt afraid for your child of color.
You want to be president.
Your wife, whose public health is her main initiative, and you see the ACA being cut away.
Right.
Wouldn't you choose to do anything to counter what you're seeing as the erosion?
No, I'd go to my Hawaiian island and build a higher wall.
That's you.
You don't have Dothraki death meals when you watch Game of Thrones. Apparently, that's what Mark does. So, show of hands, who would vote for Mark Zuckerberg as president?
Against whom?
It would depend.
That's a difficult. It depends on what
against
platform
Jeff Bezos?
Forward with.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg.
I'd vote for Zuckerberg over Bezos.
Really?
Yeah. Because Jeff Bezos is a megalomaniac.
I mean, lacks empathy.
Yeah.
That's not why I wouldn't vote for him. It's more that I see him as such a capitalist, more so than Zuckerberg.
And I don't want to hear him laughing on TV.
Policy.
Things are very different. So I've grown up, I grew up in Australia, which is very much a social democracy, where there's a public safety net and a very substantial free healthcare. Unemployment benefits and so forth and so on. And I now live in the UK. Again, social healthcare, very fundamental. I do not work in the US because there is no fundamental human rights here in terms of no public health care. There's no safety net. If you fall out of the system, let's say...
This is a country where you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yes.
And it's up to you to achieve...
This is
just don't injure yourself while you're pulling up your bootstraps.
Why should I take care of you if you don't want to take care of
me? I know. Yeah, I love that when the people... I mean, this is the only country in the world where medical bankruptcy is a thing. So the most
really? The only country?
Yep. You can actually go
bankrupt. We're number one in medical bankruptcy.
We are. We are exemplary in
That's right.
We have amazing medical bankruptcy lawyers, though. Amazing.
And that helps so much. I'm a bit of a believer in this. I'm not a big fan of the universal basic income. I think there's so many flaws in it.
That's insanity.
No, there are reasons.
When AI is doing all the work, then we got to figure out some way for people to eat.
So the basic premise behind unemployment benefits or universal basic income is if you don't feed the people and keep them in their houses and keep them happy.
They make terrible soldiers.
They come out of the houses and start causing riots.
Yes.
They revolt and you end up with the peasant uprisings of the
years gone by. The truth is, it's very clear that the history of government is the history of trying to prevent peasant uprisings.
Pretty much, yes. And so if you don't start thinking about, I was reading a research article this week. I'll try and find the notes and get into the show notes. They're predicting that something like 40% of middle management jobs will disappear in the next 10 years through machine learning and AI. So particularly imagine, let me give you a scenario.
But every job below that or a great deal of the jobs below that will also disappear. Forget middle management. Who's going to drive? Nobody.
Yeah.
Who's going to be a cashier?
But middle management has typically been safe. right? They sit in a they. What they're saying
the
now
first
is
first people I fire is the middle manager.
Okay, I have a hypothetical question for you.
They don't do anything.
As long as the tech journalists are okay.
So
quarterly review. So they're talking now about artificial intelligence, which will conduct the quarterly review.
Oh God!
Review. So you will literally have
it's
a voice
time for
AI.
Your performance rating. Yes. Come to my
then
office.
They will conduct those every quarter.
Google already has software that knows who's going to quit and when.
Exactly.
So when I went up to Amazon to talk to them about this new concept they have for stores that have no cashiers. Mm. You walk in, you get your stuff, sensors tell them.
They already have that. It's called shoplifting.
That's what I said. That's amazing technology that already exists, incredible. Right? They said that as many people will work in those stores as work in your current 7-Elevens.
Working in security?
Because they're going to be prepping the food. Mm. Uh-huh. They're going to be doing all the back end work. Because what you're going to buy is stuff that's going to eradicate cooking, or they're going to be able to allocate all this other resources.
Rubbish.
I was amazed that they were trying to spin this. Like, how are you even thinking?
So the first store might come out with all that great, and then straight after that, there'll be an accountant looking at the bottom line going, you know, if we got rid of all those high cost goods, we could just increase our profit margin and da-da-da, boom. That sounds like utter rubbish.
Here's one other question.
They're fooling themselves. They're probably
what would you tell your kids? What do you tell your kids that they should pursue going forward so that they can survive in this world?
I think it would be folly for me to try and predict who they will be and who the future will be.
So they're screwed.
Pretty much.
I think
but that's the whole point. Is we've all figured it out. If you
universal basic income, maybe they don't have to work.
My
maybe
theory is
that behind a universal basic income is that there are you will have vast unemployment, and those people if they don't have jobs to take, what do they do for food and medical and housing?
In most cases, what happens though, at least so far with universal basic income, is it eliminates all entitlements. So you get you get a lump sum. But you're responsible for your health care and everything else out of that lump sum.
Well, in the U.S., where health care is a problematic industry, yes. But in other countries, it would not necessarily be.
Didn't we basically have that in Alaska?
Yes, because they had oil, right?
Right, so they got an oil check.
Everybody got a big check.
How'd that work
out? My fear is that this is a perpetual motion machine. Mm. Because who's providing the money? I mean... What I'm going to spend? Give the money to the corp. I'm going to spend some of my income so the corporations can make money so they can give me back my income. But that doesn't.
There has to be
work.
Something, right? Because if
there's got to be something. If you have adding value to the system, like oil reserves, adding value to the system.
Right.
Well, look at the riots you saw in Ferguson. Right. Why did those people start to riot? Fundamentally, it comes down to
poverty.
Right. So if you don't start thinking about, so if you start to increase,
I agree.
You know, cut jobs at radical levels. You're now going to have vast unemployment. Those people will suffer. You know, if you don't have enough food or don't have enough health care or whatever, then what else is there? Anyway,
it's fair to say that fake news and the Comey letter and all that aside, Trump won fundamentally because a lot of people were scared because they didn't see a future.
Mm. It's very difficult to understand social democracy, the idea of that government spending can be...
Stimulus.
A safety net keep you safe.
You know, unfortunately, it's, I think, a non-starter than the U.S. just because of our national history and our personalities. Yeah.
How universal basic income works out over time, you know, there's going to be models. I mean, how do we get to the current set of economic models that we operate society on today? They've evolved over 200 or 300 years. So trying to predict where UBI goes is very, very difficult. But we know some form of it will be needed if we continue to reduce jobs with tools like Facebook. Look at what Facebook's done for recruiting. Look what LinkedIn's done for recruiters and just wiped out vast industries. Like, and there's no more need to place job ads in the local newspaper to find them because you go and find them somewhere else, right? So all of that technology that these guys, people in Silicon Valley get all clever and feel great has actually been destructive to the economy overall.
Yeah, I wrote a column about this and did a lot of thinking about it. And it's like they talk about disruption. Let's disrupt this. Let's disrupt that. Within Silicon Valley circles, disruption feels like something is being fixed. Outside of Silicon Valley, disruption sounds like something's being broken. Okay. Yeah. So basically, somebody like is going to have self-driving trucks. Well, there's a hundreds of people who own small trucking companies, and that disruption means that one 30-year-old is going to crush your industry and become a billionaire while you get in the unemployment line. Exactly. That's what disruption is to a lot of the world, and I think that has
Let's look at Amazon's public cloud. We're talking now about Amazon's public cloud. AWS is running roughly around about a $10 billion run rate.
Yeah.
Depending on who you listen to and what sort of numbers you use, that's probably destroyed $50 to $100 billion worth of revenue in the enterprise IT market.
Wow.
It's either a 5 to 10 to 1.
Who is disenfranchised by AWS?
Oracle, Cisco, IBM.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
But, you know, the companies who used to produce software, the companies that used to produce computers, that which is done in enterprise IT needed people and salespeople. Right. So it's not just companies. It's also headcount are being reduced. You don't need so many salespeople.
In my grandmother's lifetime, technology changed at a faster pace than at any time in history.
Right.
In my mother's lifetime, social norms changed at a faster pace than in any time in history. Mm. And I think that in my lifetime, economics will change at a faster pace than in any time in history. And that's what we're fundamentally looking at.
Interesting.
I would agree with that.
Wow, you guys are smart. I just want the new iPhone.
You can have it. You've got to
Pay
money for it.
Please, can I have it?
All right, lots more to talk about. Mike Elgin, Becky Worley, Greg Farrow. This is a good panel. I hope everybody's enjoying this conversation. Very, very interesting.
We've danced around politics, I think, with real...
A razor's edge.
Yes. I hope it's been a razor's edge.
Dancing on the razor's edge.
Nobody said golden showers.
Oh.
There we go.
Actually, we could talk a little bit about that. There's a tech angle to this leaked dossier that's interesting. I shouldn't say leaked, but it's interesting. For instance, one of the pieces implied that Telegram... The secure messaging service created by the Mark Zuckerberg of Russia, Pavel Durov, in fact, was cracked by the FBS, the Russian security service, and that some of the information came from that.
Yep.
Telegram was quick to deny that they had been hacked, but they've always used their own roll your own encryption, which has never really been fully vetted. In fact, there's good reason to think it may not be fully secure. They had a good explanation for what the what they believe the leak was, which had to do with phone number verification of an account. But I thought that was very interesting.
I always get a kick out of
maybe not
want to
use Telegram anymore for secure messaging.
Well, but see, you don't know what is secure and what isn't. I always get a kick out when people say, "Oh, well, the NSA can't crack that, and the GCSQ can't crack that."
We
don't know.
We don't know.
They exist to crack everything, and they have. You know, I'm sure that they have access to things, lots of things that we have no idea that they have access.
Well, here's what we do know: that we know that the math is hard, but we also know that it is solvable, that it is crackable given enough time and horsepower. Mm-hmm. And what's the missing piece of that puzzle is how much horsepower the NSA is capable of applying.
So for the current generation of cryptos that we're talking about 1024 keys, it's generally assumed that that's not crackable with brute force. So you can't just feed the key into
it at all.
No, it's until quantum computers come through, the broad assumption
it's just
is
it's not fast enough. Use a 4096 bit key.
Yeah. But the challenge was with Telegram was that there is, if at any time you can get the keys, then you can take control of it.
Right.
And in this particular situation...
It does have some forward secrecy, but it's not perfect forward secrecy.
Yeah, but this is just a known... You know, if you're using public key cryptography and if you can get to the right place, then yes, you can get those keys and you can decode it.
You could decode every...
But that applies equally to TLS and equally to... You know,
but there is perfect forward secrecy. There is off the record.
That's right.
There are technologies. In fact,
it's only if you implement Telegram in a specific way that it's actually insecure, and that is by design. Right. Insecure because that's the only way the program can work.
Right.
So it's not like...
Signal is still... And now what's interesting is WhatsApp was accused of having a flaw. Moxie Marlinspike, who created the OTR protocol used that's by Open Whisper Systems, the protocol used by WhatsApp and Signal, says that was a misunderstanding of how Signal worked. And in fact, he does not believe that WhatsApp has a backdoor. There is no WhatsApp backdoor, says Moxie Marlin.
If Moxie says it, then it's going to be
I trust Moxie.
For my purposes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he knows a lot. He knows a lot more than mortal man.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and I'm sure Steve Gibson will talk about this on Security Now on Tuesday because...
At length, no doubt.
Steve does nothing with brevity, so, yeah.
But he does it with so much enthusiasm yes, the whole way through.
And we'll understand it better by the end.
Yes.
So.
Talking about security, you don't want people skimming over the details. You want all the details.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like I would say, you don't want me to be your surgeon. You know, I will leave a tool inside of your body. That's like saying, that's how I feel about it. You don't want me to be your security guru.
Well, and that was the complaint about Telegram, is they rolled their own in crypto, and that's not
That's in the history, you know, that's a long-term history. That's why everybody basically is moving to open source TLS libraries that have been known and tested and tried, is because you can't do it yourself.
Right.
And well, it's much better having one implementation globally where conceptually everybody, you know, it's either all or nothing. That the flip side of that, of course, is if there's a bug in that library, we're all done.
great new video from the EFF. We've been playing it. I asked our staff to throw this in. Baratunde Thurston explaining encryption and why it's so important.
This is the internet, and it's filled with unencrypted data.
It really is
data.
A series of tubes.
Data that can be targeted by all kinds of eavesdroppers.
A hacker
all
looks
I
like
need
Moxie.
Is Wi-Fi and some software, and...
Not a coincidence.
I can see everything you're up to.
The EFF has been protecting your privacy online for over 25 years. And now, their goal is to encrypt the web, the whole thing. Switch every site from insecure HTTP to secure HTTPS.
That's what you're talking about, TLS.
TLS
makes all the difference.
You ever seen him wear a suit and tie? He really cleans up.
He's a good-looking fella.
The lock lets you know your session is safe. Here's the problem.
We used to call it not SSL, every site, but now it's really TLS. TLS. Yeah.
But the EFF has you covered
SSL
with
fundamentally
two powerful tools.
At
the first is HTTPS Everywhere. It's a plugin for browsers like Chrome and Firefox. It encrypts your communication with most major websites, so they can't spy on it.
They being the hacker,
the
hacker flipped me off.
Questionable choices in style.
This is also good. Now, this is not Let's Encrypt, but it's a similar technology.
CertBot simplifies and automates the whole thing.
Sounds like it works very similarly.
$0.
This is like the modern day public service announcement.
Is this great?
Find out all
this is.
The EFF is protected.
So it's all right, I see what it is. It's a tool for deploying Let's Encrypt certificates.
Oh, it is Let's Encrypt. Okay.
Yeah. So they deploy Let's Encrypt certificates. Now, Let's Encrypt is very important because it's actually a conglomerate of big technology companies funding it.
And it's free and easily implemented. In fact, I use Let's Encrypt. A lot of people use Let's Encrypt.
Yes.
It's really great.
Yeah, I think so. My only concern is who's funding it. Because once you can get your hands on those private keys, you can theoretically decode everything.
Oh, crap. Well, one thing that Let's Encrypt does, which is interesting, is that the key is only good for 3 months.
Yes.
So you get a new key every 90 days.
That's deliberate because when you do certificate keys, you want to revoke them. So let's say I gave you a certificate and now I want to revoke that certificate because you're not who you say you are. So instead of maintaining certificate revocation lists, CRLs.
Which, by the way, Google has said we don't want to do. Mozilla doesn't want to do.
It's impossible.
It doesn't work.
Well, what actually would have to happen is your browser, every time you connected to a website, you would have to go and check a CRL server to say, is this certificate revoked? And if it is, then you would have to – that round trip time, not only have you got to connect to a DNS lookup, then connect to the web server, and now you've got to do a CRL. Well, on a mobile phone, now you've put your phone down and walked away and no ads can be shown and Google's not making money.
Right.
So you want to get away from CRL. So the answer to that is to go for a 30 to 90-day revocation. So you just revoke the certificates.
Automatically.
Yeah, they have an expiry date, so at 30 to 90 days, they automatically just switch off, and that's effectively your revocation.
But what's great about Let's Encrypt and the CertBot is it's automated to renewals, so you don't really have to pay any attention. I have an automated script that just every 90 days gets me the new Let's Encrypt.
So the most common HTTP server software, you know, Apache, Nginx, and HAProxy. And you just download CertBot and run it on those machines, and the crypto keys will just rotate automagically.
I love seeing Baratunde in a thoot. And by the way, another reason, to support EFF, because they're really doing God's work, I give them a monthly donation. I have monthly donations for Wikipedia, EFF, and then a few like ACLU and a few others like that, because I think we got to support these institutions. Going forward, these are the institutions that are making us safer and making the world a better place. Let's take a break real quick. More to come in just a moment, including the hackers being hacked. But This Week in Tech, this week brought to you by IT Pro TV. Good friends of mine, people who are teaching you the info you need to be a better IT professional or to become an IT professional. This is a great job market. I think it's got to be the fastest growing job market of all. And so many opportunities. So if you're thinking of starting a career in tech, in IT, or you want to get better at your job that you already have, you don't have to go back to school to do it. In fact, the school is the most expensive way to do it. And maybe you're a self-starter, but just going to the bookstore and buying a bunch of books, that's a little challenging and expensive. IT Pro TV is the middle way, the best way. Great, entertaining, engaging content, just like Twit. They stream 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, Eastern Time. They cover all of the major certs. They have 2,000 hours of content, and they add 30 hours more every week. You can stream them using your Chromecast, your Roku, your Fire TV. They've got a great Apple TV app they just launched, of course, on your PC or your tablet, and they cover everything. You want to get the Certified Ethical Hacker? That's the cert I want, CEH. They've got it. They've got it. They've got the version 9. Mm-hmm. CompTIA's Project Plus, Certified Information Systems Security Professional, Cybersecurity Analyst Plus, CCNA Cyber Ops, ITIL Operational Support and Analysis, Microsoft System Center, and also, you know, the stuff, the day-to-day stuff that makes you money, like Microsoft Office and managing Apple computers, things like that. You get the virtual machine labs, which are awesome. You don't have to have a Windows server. You don't have to have a Windows machine, just an HTML5 browser. You can configure the server, configure the clients, and every time I do it, I blow it, but it's easy. You just press the reset button, you start over. Mm. Transcender practice exam, so you can take the test before you take the test. That's worth $109 by itself. I love IT Pro TV, and you're going to love it too. We've got a great 7-day trial for you and a really big discount. Normally $57 a month, which by even then, that's a good deal. Or get a year, that's the most economical, $570 a year. That's less than buying the materials, let alone going to a technical school. But if you use our offer code TWIT30, TWIT30, it's 30% off for the forever, for the lifetime of your account. itpro.tv/twit. Tim and Don are good friends, really love what they've done, and they're just knocking it out of the park. Incidentally, they are going to be introducing a new membership level beginning February 1st. And I think you're going to want to subscribe now, because all current premium members as of that day will automatically be given the highest membership level. So effectively, you want to lock in this price now. Do it today. itpro.tv/twit and use the offer code TWIT30.
Mm. We have one of my listeners from the Packet Pushers actually emailed us, and what he does is every day he spends 1 hour watching videos.
That's all it takes.
That's all it takes. And he doesn't sit the exams. He doesn't do whatever. But what he's doing is learning all the stuff that's around him. So he's in this particular job. But by listening to the videos and watching stuff, he's suddenly becoming aware of what all the people around him are doing.
The value of the test is moot. It just helps you get that first job, because without the, you know, you have no way to prove that you can do it.
Well, so he's actually looking for where he wants to go.
Once you've got a job, so he's doing a bit of a, you can then upgrade your, yourself.
And this is a great way to do it.
Yeah, I think it's great. Yep. Cellebrite, you know the name. It's a company that makes a device that law enforcement uses to suck the data from your phone. They also, we think, may have been the company that sold the hack to the FBI that allowed them to get into the Bakersfield iPhone. They've been hacked, which frankly is not good on your resume if you're a security firm. According to Motherboard, which has been doing a great job on tech coverage, Joseph Cox writing, Motherboard has obtained and validated 900 gigabytes of data from Cellebrite, including customer information, databases, technical data about their products, and most importantly, you can use this information to see who's been using their My Cellebrite domain, which is the portal you log into to get new software versions and make sure you've got the latest version. Cellebrite is widely used by U.S. and federal law enforcement, plus, according to the hacked data, possibly also with authoritarian regimes in Russia, the UAE, and Turkey.
And FamilyTreeNet.
And FamilyTreeNow.com.
Sorry, we shouldn't make comments like that. That's not, I was just joking.
It's depressing, though, isn't it, that anybody can be hacked?
We do a show every week where we talk to some of these issues. We've actually just stopped bothering with breaches because it's pointless.
It's too common.
It's so common. The second thing is there's no impact. So look at Yahoo. Lost 1 billion accounts over a sustained 5-year period, and yet Verizon still bought them for the value that was agreed. Yeah. So they've gotten away with that. A breach of that magnitude should have had, in any reasonable reading of the situation, some sort of impact to the company financially.
Here's the good news. We don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yep.
President-elect Trump has appointed a... What are you laughing about?
The mayor of New York.
The former mayor of New York as his cybersecurity advisor, Rudy Giuliani.
Yes.
Now, you may say, well, Rudy Giuliani, what does he know about security? Oh, no, he has a company, a full-service security investigative and crisis management consulting firm called Giuliani Security and Safety. Let's just run over to that website right now.
No,
this site can't be reached. The reason is... It was a mess. It was running a four-year-old copy of Joomla with...
Joomla's a comedy of errors.
With more than a dozen known Joomla, exploits.
Yeah. Yes.
You could... I mean, it had a publicly... Look, at this is Michael Feenan, who I guess is a security researcher. As soon as he heard Giuliani had been appointed to this cybersecurity job, he checked expired SSL certificate, doesn't force HTTPS, exposed CMS login, so you can go in there and brute force the login at your leisure.
Yep.
It uses Flash.
Well, you know what's probably great about this is he probably put security company on his resume.
Yeah.
And got away with it.
Yeah.
So now he's there. It's fine. Right?
Uses version 5.4 of PHP.
So what you're saying with this list of things that are not quite right in his field of expertise is that he is one of the better qualified candidates is being put on.
Foresight to set up a security company like, 7 or 8 years ago, knowing that this situation was coming. So we need a man like that. Who's going to take on cybersecurity?
I doubt that. I think the thinking seems to be that we need to get tough on the cyber.
The cyber.
And Giuliani is tough.
It was
end
either
story.
That
He's
or,
the guy.
It was either that or Barron. And I think they made the right choice.
I don't know. Barron might.
Barron knows the tough. Cyber.
Okay,
that kid is good.
Have you heard about Trump's razor? it's the maxim that the stupidest explanation is always the right one.
Any event, I don't know even where to begin. The nation's future president, he will be a president on Friday, his cybersecurity advisor, the guy, remember Trump really in his press conference blamed the DNC for their lousy security.
Yes.
They got hacked because they were insecure, that's all.
Yep.
Is now putting his trust into a man who can't even run a website.
But on the other side of this, at that sort of level, you're security chops aren't actually all that relevant.
No.
What actually matters is your ability to bring people to the table.
Well, it's clear that Rudy knows where to go to get the best people to run his website.
From 5 years ago.
Can I go back to that point you made about breaches and the idiocy of reporting on them? Because I really think that there's an opportunity for me to learn from this. In conjunction with an anecdote, I was at the grocery store, like a little mom and pop bodega kind of place, and the guy was asking me about my credit card. Did I feel nervous because it was a high limit credit card? I said, no, I use a service on my phone that lets me see every time a transaction comes through. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't freak me out because if something comes through, I see it almost immediately. And he calls his son up. Did you know about this? The Mint. And the son says, I don't trust it. And I said, well, it's owned by Intuit. And, that's a good indicator that it's not a fly-by-night company. Mm-hmm. He says, doesn't matter. They've all been hacked. I don't trust anybody. And then at the same time, I got in the car, and there was an NPR interview going on, and there was this Russian journalist, and she said, when you don't trust anything, you can't believe in anything.
Yes.
And I just thought that was so interesting, this concept of, like, we don't trust companies. Mm-hmm. We don't trust governments. We don't trust the security of, our security services. So we're in not just post-truth, but we're in like a what do you believe in then?
We're screwed.
Post-belief or post-fundamentals. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the breaches thing is just really true to me because I'm continually reporting, this breach, that breach.
It's no point talking about the breaches. I mean, look back at Target when it got breached. How's its share price doing?
Right. Bing.
Up and to the right. Glorious.
Doesn't matter.
So Heartland Payment Systems.
You know why?
Up and to the right. There's zero penalty.
We don't care.
Can I make one other point? We pay 3% on all of our credit card purchases. That's why we don't care, because they have the liability. Yeah. That's the unbanked should care.
Yes.
They're the ones who have more at risk.
Yes. And they're going to be the ones who are going to struggle, because if you don't have an electronic transaction capability, you will be frozen out of the system over time. And, the financial Apple Pay, for example, this ability to wave your Apple Watch at a coffee shop is really... the coolest thing ever, right? So let's face it. You know.
Yeah, but who can afford it, right? It's yeah. You got to buy
what,
a
the coffee or an Apple? Yeah, sorry.
Both. I guess if you can afford the coffee, you can afford an Apple Watch.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's right. You know, if you've got the privilege to own an Apple Watch and an Apple phone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you've got to have like $2,000 worth of assets to use to wave your watch and get by a transaction. Just like buying online. You know, you can shop on Amazon provided you've got a $600 phone or a $500 laptop to buy on Amazon. It's totally free.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, your data breaches don't just happen at Target. They might also happen at Best Buy. So the Geek Squad. Now, this is an interesting, challenging story because no one likes child pornography.
Mm.
That's a bad thing. And when you bring your computer to Best Buy, and if the technician is going through your computer and happens to see child pornography, it is their legal requirement to report you, to turn you in.
It's anybody's.
Anybody.
Not just yeah. Best Buy.
If I'm looking over Greg Farrow's shoulder, I notice he's got that film on there. I can't. But if I were able to read his screen, I might want to turn him in. I don't know what he's doing. But I no. But this is where it gets interesting. And by the way, a judge has ruled, no, the defense can bring this up. A California doctor is facing federal charges after his hard drive was flagged by a Geek Squad technician. But the lawyer in the process of discovery for his defense found the FBI had cultivated 8 sources in the Geek Squad over a 4-year period, with all of them receiving payment. And at that point, the judge says, well, you can pursue this. Is the Geek Squad an employee of a federal agency? In which case, the search is illegal because it's a warrantless search. So a private person, I can look at your hard drive, and it's not a warrantless search.
As a citizen, you can report it, and it, go ahead.
But
there's no false motivation.
But if that person is being paid by the FBI to look, then a warrant is needed.
I don't know how this is any different. I mean, I watch all the police procedural dramas. They all use CIs to go do illegal things. All the time. And then they get this information through the illegal activities of the person they're paying. And then they go and they're like, well, we didn't do it. We didn't break and enter. We didn't do these other things. And everybody's like, yeah, you know, the right side wins again. And it's like, this feels to me, it has the flavor of just something that happens in the world generally has now entered the world of technology and privacy. And now we're like, oh, my God, this has to be stopped. But this happens all the time.
Right.
Mm. So
let me just, as a global person, somebody who doesn't necessarily just live in the U.S.
A citizen of the world.
Mm. It only applies in the U.S. So the U.S.
Well, that's the whole NSA thing. NSA can gather information about foreign nationals.
No, the way the police force works in this country is it works with very little funding. So their only way to make it stick is to use CIs and to do entrapment and stuff like that. It's not legal to do that in most other countries in the world. It's just the way your legal system works here.
Wait, entrapment's not legal. I mean, I think that's an overarching assumption. I mean,
the judge will throw
it out if he detects it.
So
the point is, this guy signed his computer over to Best Buy.
Yes.
Best Buy found this file in a weird partition that had been erased.
They had to dig through it, in other
dug
words.
Dug through the hard drive looking for evidence.
Looking for evidence. That
Best Buy
be the
did
case.
Not receive a payment.
No.
But the bounty... And that's the question, is this is a bounty. It's
or
like
is it a prepayment or is it a bounty? Yeah.
And
yeah.
Therefore, that went to the individual.
So if you did that in other countries, European countries, Asian countries, that would be entrapment. Right? It's not. It's just not allowed. You can report that as a citizen's arrest, but the way that – so, for example, in this country, let's say you get arrested as a drug – on a drug offense, a minor drug offense, the police will make it a condition for you. They will let you off. They'll cut you a deal if you go and find 8 more drug dealers and report them. So that is an exclusively something that only happens in the U.S. It's not something that happens outside.
Well,
of this
but
country.
I'm sure this is the case in other countries. If a psychotherapist,
yes,
protected by client privilege, does hear of a crime that is about to be committed or being committed, is required. There's a reporting requirement, is there not? That's true in other countries.
And also that kind of payment for illegal snooping and all that kind of stuff, in fact, is much wider spread than you claim. I mean, in Asia, you mentioned Asia, in China and Japan, two massive countries, that is fairly widespread. And then beyond the English-speaking world in Europe, Most countries don't fit in those categories.
I should exclude the French system out of this because, yeah, that's a completely different.
Especially recently.
I don't want to conflate this beyond whatever. I'm saying that there are aspects of this which are unique to the U.S. legal system and the way that your legal process runs.
Right.
So, therefore, I just wanted to highlight that.
Well, in fact, that's why the judge has allowed the defense attorney to pursue this line of questioning, because it does raise the issue of the legality of the evidence. And here's a memo, for instance, from 2010, where an FBI, 2010, 6 years ago, an FBI agent said, source has reported all has been quiet for the last 5 or 6 months. However, source agreed that once schools started again, they may see an influx of child pornography. The Best Buy technician involved in this case was later identified as a source. So for 6 years, the FBI has been in direct communication with this Best Buy Geek Scott technician and has been encouraged and has been saying, do you see any, what's going on? Mm-hmm. This is what the defense attorney says. This two-way thoroughfare of information suggests the FBI considers the Best Buy technician to be a partner in the ongoing effort of law enforcement to detect and prosecute child pornography. So that's where this might, in fact, get that evidence suppressed, because it is illegal search and seizure if he's working for the FBI.
I always question myself in these stories by saying, substitute child pornography for tax evasion.
That's the problem.
Because if someone was reporting tax evasion based on Excel spreadsheets that they found in partitions that had been deleted on a computer, I think we would all very clearly articulate this is not okay.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, so that's where I would say if they have a legal mandate, or we have a different set of rules for child pornography, or the imminent
different rules, because you do sign when you hand over your hard drive to Best Buy that you have waived any right to raise a Fourth Amendment claim because you have to sign this. I am on notice any product containing child pornography will be turned over to the authorities.
Done.
So you're on notice, right? Mm. On the other hand, the Geek Squad guy has apparently lied to investigators, saying, I do not remember ever being paid by the FBI, and prosecutors have acknowledged the FBI paid him $500.
It's probably because the FBI told him not to tell anybody he was working
when
for the FBI.
FBI gives me $500. I never remember.
And you're right, child pornography muddies the water, because no one is going to say, oh, they shouldn't go after this guy.
And in the transition of the show, it also muddies the water in the world of advertising. Leo.
Child pornography does?
Yeah, with FARC, the FARC story.
Oh, I love this story. And, of course, we know Drew Curtis very well. Friend of the show. I've been a fan of FARC since we used to have him on weekly on the old Screensavers. And he's pretty upset. There's a couple of things going on. He's pretty upset because Google has blocked him from having ads. Now it turns out he's not alone in this. What's going on, Mike?
So Drew Curtis, of course, with FARC. Basically, there was a story from years and years ago that contained a photograph, which after a little bit of digging, they found was a photograph of a fully clothed adult.
I'll show you the picture. I think it's in the FARC story.
Totally
if I can
acceptable
find it.
Picture. Yeah. It was flagged as child pornography, and so they simply stopped payment for his advertising for weeks. And this is during a bad year for FARC, and they really need it in the end of the year, and they just turned off the tap. And it took FARC a long time to even get through to Google on this whole question. And when they finally got through and were communicating with Google, Google said, well, you had the Pedo Bear logo also present, and therefore we considered it child pornography. Pedo Bear is some kind of teddy bear that is, I guess, trolls or whatever use to associate with child pornography. Anyway, there was no child pornography. They did nothing wrong, but they basically
accused... No, it was an adult actress in the photo. It was not, you know...
Yeah, but they essentially accused FARC of committing a horrendous felony and cut off all the money, and Google was completely wrong, and it took forever for them to... And Drew Curtis goes on this, given that that's their business, fundamentally, and I agree with Drew Curtis on this, fundamentally, any business should take care of their customers. Google's customers are the advertisers.
Tell that to Silicon Valley.
They're off canceling drone programs and building self-driving cars and all this stuff. Meanwhile, their customers are sitting there being burned and accused of felonies.
Well, we've heard this story again and again in various
So here's
guises.
The problem I have with this.
It's automated.
I think these people are incredibly foolish for running such a stupid business. Mm-hmm. Right? If you think... So if your sole revenue, so what they've effectively done is outsourced their advertising to Google.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're completely dependent on Google as their only revenue source. That is the dumbest thing you can do to your business.
And in hindsight, they have no human contact with their sole source of revenue.
No one to talk to.
That is a huge problem.
So my problem here is you outsourced a critical part of your business.
A lot of companies, a lot of sites do this.
But none of them are actually thinking about...
Including a bunch of Macedonian teenagers.
Now, sure, clearly he has accepted that risk. Now, there are certain parts of your business that it is wise to outsource, right? And they are things like cleaning toilets and emptying rubbish bins and window washing the windows because they do not impact. But if you give away a key part of your business, that is literally where the money comes from, to another company, you have put yourself at risk to the platform.
That's a good
and
point.
This goes over and on and on. Now, when we built the business that we run or that I run at Packet Pushers, we deliberately do not run on Google Ads because I would not want to have my business at someone else's beck and call.
But this happens all the time. Look at the newspapers that use Facebook as a publishing platform. It's not unusual.
Yep. And they're still not smart enough to work out that they need to own the relationship with their clients, right? Yeah. Their customers are the people who read it, but your clients, and what they're saying is, yeah, we'll let Google or Facebook go and find clients and bring us money because we can sack our advertising people or the, you know, if you give away your revenue.
Don't put your monetization in the hand of a bot.
But
anybody else, right?
Yeah. At least it's Google. You look at someone like Time, they just signed a 3-year deal for $100 million with Outbrain and I think, these guys?
Yeah. Outbrain and Gula,
Tabula. Yeah.
Wow.
Is how Time Magazine's monetizing?
Yeah. Around the web stories that you see at the bottom of every
web article. You might also be interested in belly fat.
Once you see them everywhere. They take you to these, they seem editorial. They take you to these quasi-editorial click farms, and then they try and sell you something. And this is how a lot of really highbrow journalistic sites are maintaining their websites.
You know what bugs me? Google AMP. Which is the idea of Google AMP was to speed up loading on mobile platforms by eliminating disgusting ad tech, elaborate, JavaScript, punch the monkey things to pre-cache content so it loads instantly and it works really well. And Google's made a deal with Outbrain and Taboola so that content will load very fast too. And unfortunately, it looks like it's native advertising. Yeah. It looks like content. And it's just going to fool more people. And it's just crapped up.
The New York Times is one of the only sites that does this right in that they have an in-house creative team that creates their own
native content.
Native content.
And that's the way to run. So here's my problem is we've seen this so many times. These people literally outsource their revenue to somebody else. And then they get into a mindset of, it's because I write content on the internet, it's my privilege to make money. I don't have to think about
Right? You know, Greg?
Dumbass business models
with
dumbass people, and
Drew,
you get a dumbass.
I'm sorry, but you're a dumbass.
Yep.
Well, but
I'm
that doesn't mean that. Well,
yeah, it sounds better when you say dumbass.
Yeah. Greg says it, he
much
calls
better.
It like it is, but it sounds kind of high.
But
brow.
We still need to blame Google. I mean, Google, it doesn't make Google.
Well, that's Drew's point of view is, well, this is Google's business. Why are they screwing me and not just me?
Why is he using Google instead of some other ad tech company?
I don't
know. Why didn't he, as soon as his revenue stopped coming, why didn't he just switch ad tech providers?
No idea. I don't know anything about
why
his business.
Why blame Google
or how many employees
for
he
his
has
own
or how
stupidity.
They work or what their model is. I don't know anything about his business. But I do know that Google makes a fortune from not employing human beings to provide tech support to their customers. Yep. And I don't like the sound of that.
We all
then don't
say
use
how
Google.
Disruptive.
Right? Don't
kick
Google.
That's legit.
There's over 250.
Thank God there's Yahoo.
Yeah, but Yahoo uses
a company you can count on back.
But
when
there's 250
Yahoo.
Ad tech companies in the back end,
like
those disgusting names that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been able to instantly go and say, no money coming from Google, go to another company, put their ads on my
site.
If that's where his revenue coming from. Yeah. Right. And what he should be doing right now is he should be out there working on a business strategy to start selling advertising on himself and doing direct deals with companies to put ads on his site so that he owns his business and stop whining about, Google didn't give me all the money that I earned.
I don't know.
Pedophiles need to stop whining about they shouldn't have gone to Best Buy.
I just think there's also a point that's much larger here, which is we talk about how disruptive and amazing technology is until you have a customer service complaint.
Yep.
And then you have zero recourse except to go sound like a whiny bitch on Twitter.
Yep.
And
that was the funniest thing from the internship, the comedy about Google, where they got put on Gmail tech support. And I saw that in Silicon Valley. Everybody burst out laughing.
Because there's no phone number to call
Gmail when your Gmail doesn't work.
That's so funny.
Why do we all rely on Gmail? Same problem.
Same problem.
My email's down. Who are you going to call?
Exactly. And, you know, that's why most companies are choosing Office 365. So enterprise IT, they don't use Google for that exact reason. Yeah. Which is why Google, of course, has an enterprise people who would actually... But anyway, the mistake that people make is just because I managed to write something and publish it on the internet, I have a right to make money. You do not, right? You have to write content that people actually want to read. And if you want to monetize it, you have to understand what making money is all about. And that means a sales force and selling it and managing sales.
Or at the very least, diversification of income streams, at the very least.
If that's a 15-year-old business model in 2001, you could publish something and money would come teeming out of the sky. This is 2017. Media companies of any sort need to grow up.
So Drew farked himself is what you're saying.
I don't know Drew and I don't know what fark does, but I know how the business model works.
I apologize, Drew, but he's right.
I love you, Drew.
Our show today brought to you by... I'm going to monetize the heck out of this show. Let me tell you right now.
Bring it home, Leo.
Bring it home. Our show brought to you by those good folks at Tracker. We're all used to... Who doesn't lose stuff, right? I saw a stat the other day. The average person spends 40 minutes a day looking
That's so mean. That is
keys,
so mean.
Glasses, remote controls. All you got to do is get the Tracker. The Tracker is a cute little quarter-sized anodized aluminum device. By the way, there are other Bluetooth trackers like this. The problem with the one I'm thinking of, when the battery dies, you throw it out. It's done. You can't replace the Tracker. You can replace the battery. It's awesome. What you do is it doesn't have a GPS built into it. I want to be very clear about that. I think a lot of times people say, it's not GPS there. You can't put GPS in that thing. It would cost a lot more for one thing. You pair it to your phone. Your phone, the Tracker software, can track up to 10 devices. I actually have my Tracker attached to my keys because that's what I lose the most. You can have a couple of things it'll help you with. First of all, separation alerts. You leave your keys behind. The Tracker app on your phone goes, hey, your keys, you left them behind as soon as you get 100 feet away. But it can go the other way, too. Your Tracker device, if you've got your keys but you left your phone behind, can beep at you. You can even push a button on the Tracker device that will make your phone yell. You get to customize that alert. I love this. Okay, so a lot of these devices, you leave your key. Let's say you go to Vegas. You're doing really well. You have a couple of drinks. You're playing the craps. You leave your keys at the crap table. Okay. You get back to the room. You look at your phone. The phone says your keys are at the crap table. Problem is, since then, some guy from Muncie picked up your keys and got on a plane, and your keys are now in Muncie. I don't know why Muncie, but that's where they are. How would you know? Because the Tracker is in you're in the room in Vegas. Well, here's the thing. Everybody, see that? That map has 3.5 million. Zoom out. You can see it's all over the world. 3.5 million Tracker users, Tracker devices out there in the wild. That means zoom out, Carsten. Just zoom out a little bit. There you go. You can see the whole world is loaded with all over the place. Even Muncie. So the moment somebody with the Tracker app on their phone walks by your keys in Muncie, their app goes, oh, there's Leo's keys. I'm not saying it happened to me, but the app said, there's Leo's keys. And then it said to me, hey, your keys are in Muncie now. And now I know where they are. This is beautiful. This is the largest crowd GPS network in the world.
Leo, I used this in Marseille when we were living in Marseille, and I put it on. They have the giant European keys with the big...
Yeah, the tassel.
Yeah, the
love
gigantic.
Yeah.
And I had it attached to that, and it occurred to me that this is actually a security thing. So if I'm out and about, I lose the keys, or something happens to the keys, if those keys are away from the apartment, I know that some burglar hasn't broken in and waiting for me
but
with a giant knife.
Apartment.
They have the apartment. Then I have another issue, and then I have to. Yeah, so
never
it's,
thought of that.
It's great for travelers. It really does work.
You could
abroad.
Put them in your bags. Yeah. I mean, this is
you
really
know what I'm
useful.
Doing? I've got my daughter just got a retainer. It's
put
going
it
on
the
retainer case.
Mom, I can't
it's going on the
well.
Case.
I got a tracker.
Why
do I need to wear this, Mom?
It's going on the case.
Oh, put
it's
it in the case.
The case.
That's a good idea.
It'll really take you some time to get the Hamilton singing
yes.
going around a track.
That's right.
I've seen these used in corporate companies in paper files.
Oh.
And the ones that, you know, the internal mail where you have to ship a document
what
around.
What a good idea.
And when you've got a company which has got like 50 or 100 or 300 locations, where the hell is that?
Oh, that's brilliant.
And if you've got a piece of it, you pop it in and then ship it around, and then you know where the hell that critical documentation is in theory.
That is so cool. So, yeah. Here's the deal. Go to thetracker.com, T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K-R, no E, no second E, thetracker.com. Promo code TWIT and buy all the trackers you need, but you're going to get a free one thrown in at the end when you use the promo code TWIT. Free Tracker Bravo with your order, thetracker.com. They are growing so fast. I think he told me it's 100,000 new trackers in the wild every week.
And it's network effects. The more they grow, the better it is.
You want them to grow fast. It's great. What else? A couple of quick things. Here's a I really like this. The iPeg guy is a designer, said this is the next Mac Pro. Upgradable. Just spread it out a little bit. I've been saying Apple should bring back the cheese grater, the old Mac Pro, because it was upgradable. And Apple, I don't know if this year Apple's going to have an upgraded Mac Pro or if they're just going to abandon the whole line. Sometimes I think Apple
what,
doesn't.
What are we looking at, Leo? This is somebody's concept.
But see how it's, you could upgrade. You could. It's got a real video card, so you could actually change it. You could upgrade the hard drives. It's got slots for four hard drives. And it's still beautiful. You could still say innovate my ass or whatever it is Phil Schiller said when he introduced the Mac Pro. And you stopped know, all innovation.
It just strikes me the Mac Pro is don't probably the precursor to dongle hell.
Really, it was the first.
It was the first of the dongle hells. Yeah. Apple says that we're going to put this inside and everything else is going to hang off this thing. Like
Apple's the dongle industrial complex.
According to Ars Technica, Andrew Cunningham was very good and should know. He says Apple is planning a Netflix and is going to do scripted TV shows. They're getting into the TV business. It actually comes from Wall Street Journal, so let's give credit where credit is due. The Wall Street Journal, Apple sets its sight on Hollywood plans for original content. That's a hard thing to do.
That's a big outlay of cash over a long period of time. Do they have the
cash
commitment?
God knows. As long as they make those shows in the Netherlands, they're set.
You know, if I wanted to upset Hollywood, what would I announce?
Oh.
What would I leak?
So you think... this is a shot across the bow.
This is playing hard.
Trying
ball.
To get them to this cooperate is, with
Apple.
Apple's. Yeah.
We're Apple. You've got to come to us on our terms.
You won't sell us your content?
We'll you won't sell us own. Your content? We'll just go and do like Netflix and stuff and Amazon and make our own.
Like
so
it.
Make, come on, Hollywood.
It's leaked. It's leaked.
It's not, no.
Actually, the
not,
Journal.
Not worth buying
the Journal is known for being a conduit for Apple PR.
Yep. Yeah.
Like they,
this sounds like a PR play.
Yeah, you're smart.
They're actually doing business negotiations and saying to Hollywood, come to the table. Or we'll go like Amazon and Netflix and we won't need your content.
Brilliant. I think you're right.
They have such less... Their leverage is so much smaller than it would have been in days prior when it comes to this because
no, Hollywood, no, it was reversed. Hollywood was absolutely refusing to give Apple content for fear of them dominating the market. And they did the same thing with Netflix and with Amazon and then Netflix and Amazon just turned around and started making their own content.
But that's what I mean. It's that Apple's leverage is diminished.
Is the fact that they're now using Apple, Netflix and Amazon as leverage to say, sell us your content.
Isn't that
Hollywood,
funny?
Right?
Wow.
Isn't
that, how we have...
Flip that around, invert that concept, right? Mm. Apple could go and start making content. And yes, you know, with repatriation on the horizon and a tax holiday from President-elect Trump, sure, what's $10 billion
they
invested over
money.
5 years? It's not a cat. It's not an issue.
Still, I can't wait to see Game of Phones. That's going
to
be a great show.
Well, they do have some original content already. They have,
That app one.
They have the...
Right, the app. What is it called? The app.
It's got a great name.
Yeah, it's a really good name. It's a ripoff of something else.
Chat room will know. We'll find out in a moment.
They bought House Carpool Karaoke.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they're doing a 30-minute Carpool Karaoke.
It won't have James Corden.
Right.
It will have a rotating
so that staff. doesn't bode well for the future of their content.
No.
That sounds like a afterthought kind of content.
Yeah.
Well, I think Apple wants to sell Hollywood.
Apple's
I think
best move would be
Disney and
I agree
Pixar
with
and so forth.
But their best move was just to what did Netflix do? They had no expertise in making stuff, so they gave $100 million to Kevin Spacey.
You're just funding
and
your stuff.
Make House of Cards. You just fund it.
Right.
You
but
fund
Becky's
the right,
right
people.
It's just such a massive upfront cash commitment to commission these works. And you know, for every success that we actually see on Netflix, that I believe there's two or three shows that die.
Yeah,
on the vine or die in pre-production or
there, that is the expertise is choosing the shows. Actually, Amazon does it brilliantly. They have they do a bunch of pilots and then they put them all up and they let you choose which ones are going to get made. I think that's brilliant.
Analytics and these because these platforms show they know how long people are watching for. They know whether they're binging them. They know whether they're watching in the evenings or
in the
mornings. They know
they have much better ratings than the
there are even
TV.
Things like are people actually attentive because if you're not online for more, like you can't just press play and let it play all day.
Right.
It stops. Netflix actually stops. The reason it stops is so they get the analytics on whether you are actually watching.
Oh.
Right?
So I thought they didn't stop.
Yeah, no.
For
Netflix,
a while, they didn't stop. They played through.
If it goes
for
more than 60 minutes without you pressing start, it'll actually pause and say, "Are you still here watching?" And that's literally not because they want
to
stop streaming, partly because they want to save money, but mostly because the analytics. Are you actually watching?
Planet of the Apps.
That's the apps. Brilliant.
So cute.
Marissa Meyer leaving Yahoo's board. I don't think the merger is completed, the $4.8 billion merger. You said that Verizon isn't going to get a discount. They wanted $1 billion off.
Maybe they got one in the back end. And
I got one in the back end, and it was no fun.
I don't. I mean, the story is that at the end of the day, the deal didn't fall apart. You would have thought that a breach of this
you
sort
would
of
side, think,
right? The deal should totally fall apart. Accounts. Yahoo should be dead. There should be nails going into the coffin and people pouring, you know, sprinkling holy water on top of it because it must be cursed.
And they've spun
makes
off
money.
Yahoo.
It still makes money.
Yeah, but what it actually does is it makes double money for Verizon because Verizon makes money. So as the traffic crosses Verizon's backbone, Verizon can now match the content. So this is why they buy HuffPo.
Oh, it's for peering?
No, they sell the data about what the traffic following their backbone to the ad tech company so they can do better ad targeting.
Your data.
They get 10 to 20% better targeting. They make billions.
You're actually paying for it.
It's a $24 billion market selling traffic data as it crosses the internet backbones.
Wow.
Do you guys use Slice?
Yeah, I love Slice.
I didn't realize they're also an analytics company.
Well, because they know who's getting stuff delivered. Right, they're not the only one either, by the way. There's another company that does it.
So this is a company that combs through your email to see what receipts you have, and then it tells you when things ship.
It's on its way.
When there's a price drop.
I love it.
It's a great app, but I didn't realize they are also selling the data of what's selling.
And
they
what
were
do
the
you
ones
bet
who had
that,
the EarPod story.
Yeah, what do you bet that was their original business plan? Yeah. They knew.
All of those services should be free because they make far more money out of the back end selling the data.
Well, Slice
out the
is free.
Door.
It's
Slice
free.
Is free.
Yeah. It's free.
That's how they monetize is by selling data. Yeah. So Verizon's, you know, Verizon, AT&T, those carriers are literally, it's up tens of billions of dollars industry selling your data as it crosses the public backbone. Mm.
The Yahoo stuff that didn't go to Verizon, the stake in Alibaba, Yahoo Japan, is being rebranded. It can't be called Yahoo anymore.
No, that's
it's
what they
called
sold.
Altaba. I think they were going to call it's Alibaba mixed with nothing.
All that's left is Alibaba.
All that's left is Alibaba. It's an acronym.
it's the alternate to Alibaba.
But Marissa's, I guess, going to have some time off.
Well, this is just a holding company. Who cares if she's on the board or not? This is not
Yahoo Japan doesn't need management oversight. Yeah. The Alibaba
and
David
Filo
is
gone. In fact, four other members are going to go.
This is because
Yahoo won't even have a board. Verizon's the
This is just a financial holding company. This is no slag.
There's no technology. There's no developers. There's no.
What's next?
Well, the Yahoo Japan.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yahoo Japan is still a technology, but it's a wholly different business. Hugely successful in Japan,
but they just have a stake. They're shareholders in it. It's not like they.
Does she go to a media company? Does she go to a tech company? Does
VC.
She go to?
She becomes a VC.
Yeah, that's where she does a few years.
By the way,
plenty of money. She's got a golden parachute. She's getting hundreds of millions of dollars. So she's not worried about what she's going to do next, except she would like to do something, I imagine. VC is the easy way. That's what that's what happens to these people a lot. But I wouldn't be surprised. She's got to be a hot number, right? Because she's a woman, high profile. There's got to be a company that would love to have her as CEO.
She's only had two jobs.
She got as much out of Yahoo as there was to be gotten.
As well as she could be.
Does she go to YouTube?
I don't know.
I don't think she'd go back to Google. I think she'd move on. She left Google under mysterious circumstances, various rumors.
She fashions herself a media person now.
There's plenty of media companies.
I will watch.
Why not WAPO?
With interest.
You know, what a challenge would it be to go and work for Amazon?
Go for Bezos? Go work for Bezos? She could be vice president.
Nobody wants to work for Bezos.
Really? I think you're right.
You're a robot.
Yeah, I think you're right. Hey, we're done. This has been really fun.
Ooh, wow.
Wow, what a great panel. In fact, everybody's agreeing. Best twit ever.
Oh.
So.
The chat room said, I like this Greg guy.
I like this Greg guy.
He calls him like he sees him.
Yeah.
Not my fault. Didn't do it.
He talks funny, but I like him. Greg Farrow's at the Packet Pushers Net, packetpushers.net.
That's it.
Tell me about the podcast.
The podcast is Enterprise IT. We focus on deep dives on the technology. We mainly focus on data networking. We do a bit of a news show. There's a network break. We've got the Data Nauts, which is about private cloud and public cloud. And how is if you're an IT professional, you might want to listen to our shows and learn more about building your career in that, and get some wisdom around left and right, you know, around your core competency in the industry as a whole.
Love it. By the way, they're great shows. Must listen. And Greg makes them fun. Makes them interesting. No, you do.
Take them too seriously.
Yeah. No, and I like that. Yeah. Mike Elgin is writing, Computer World, Fast Company, et cetera, et cetera. And traveling soon.
Yes, soon. Soon off to Europe again. And I also have the Fat Cast, which is a podcast about food and technology.
How's
technology
that going?
And food. It's going great. It's been on hiatus for about a month and a half. Coming back
tomorrow.
You've
been a little busy with a granddaughter.
Yes, yes. And so... almost 2 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Yes.
Yeah, his son Kevin and his wife Nadia and beautiful.
Mm. We're grooming her to be an uber geek.
Princess.
Oh. Super geek.
Squishy
super
face. Geek.
Princess Squishy Face. P like Squishy it. Face, yeah. Yes.
Nice. Get the Fat Cast. It's on iTunes and everywhere else.
Yes.
And as Ed Bo says, if you love technology, you'll want to subscribe. And Becky Worley, you can see her every morning on Good Morning America. Practically every morning. Lots of mornings.
Yep.
More and more all the time, covering consumer technology, consumer ripoffs, chilling her body to a temperature, an ungodly temperature.
I am the, Robin Roberts calls me Mikey. Give it to Mikey. Mikey will try it. I'm B Worley on Twitter. You know what I'm doing mostly? I'm coaching. I was coaching girls soccer in the fall. I'm coaching boys rugby right now.
Oh,
and I'm
fun.
Going back to coaching girls soccer again in the spring.
You love sports. You love playing. And I'm sure it's fun to coach.
I have so much fun doing it. It's amazing.
So you're actually a soccer mom.
I have the minivan. I pick them all up.
It's the Cadillac minivan.
It has heated seats.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, what she's not telling you is she's actually doing consumer research. She's watching all the kids in the back and what they're using and how they run.
Actually, you can learn a lot
selling
from kids
these days.
Instant research every day.
Yeah. Well, at least I know who the good kids are. Oh, no, you can't play date there. No. Mommy knows.
Yeah. Mommy's got a margarita in that thermos. And
that's right. She's... Big mother. All knowing.
We do This Week in Tech every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC. If you want to stop by and watch live, you can watch on our own website, twit.tv. But you can also, we're on YouTube Live now, youtube.com/twit. Just got the silver button for 100,000 plus subscribers. Woo! Thank you. Woot, woot. They sent me kind of a snide, snarky note. Susan Wojcicki sent me a note saying, well, it's okay. I mean, it's not a million.
Oh.
But it's a pretty good number for somebody over 16.
Yeah.
So good for you, Leo. Good for you. You're trying hard. I feel like it was a participation button.
Right. And you replied and said, well, YouTube is nice, but it's not 23andMe. That awesome company run by your sister.
Oh, that would hurt. Right. That would be, that would hurt.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and mom who got it all started by leasing her garage to these young guys, Sergey and, Larry.
And she's an educational powerhouse in Silicon Valley.
Follow her
on Google Plus.
Yeah, she's great. Now you've completely... thrown my train of thought. I was telling you about the show,
where
YouTube.
To find you.
You where to find us. We're all the shows are on YouTube as well. After the fact, of course, your podcast client can find Twit easily enough. If you want to be here live, though, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv, or join us in studio. We've got a great studio audience. Really, the best looking studio audience I think we've ever had. Just email tickets at twit.tv, and we'll make sure we have a seat out for you. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week. Another twit.
This is in the can.
Yay! Yay!